Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder, and it's Friday, and we're thrilled that you're listening. Should
best
be a
day
good
ever
show.
Invented, right?
Best day ever invented.
You can't stop saying that. You say it every Friday. You need a tagline.
That's my new tagline. Well, it's my old tagline, but I'm bringing it back. Later on in the show, Dr. Ruth Westheimer will be here to discuss sex with everybody.
All right, I'm good.
A very grown-up, frank discussion about sex with Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
I'm going to teach her a few things.
Is the topic sex with everybody?
Well,
we're doing orgy talk.
It's really more an intervention for you, Steve. We didn't want to have her on as a guest. And she said to us, I can help this guy. I can help Steve Bertrand.
Well, I hope that she can.
I hope so, too.
Maybe.
God, she was on Letterman all the time and was just such a great guest for him.
Always. Wasn't she?
Just really a great sense of humor.
He would get so embarrassed by the things she would discuss.
Just wait till later. We will be, too.
I know. All right. There's so much going on sports-wise in this city that the show cannot contain it. We'll talk about plenty of other things, not just sports. But our friend Dave Ennett has stayed, mostly because, Dave, you had a Hawkopedia prepared on Steve's show, and they didn't do it.
I know. We always do one on game day, and there's a Blackhawks game tonight, and apparently Steve ran out of time.
You don't run out of time for Hawkopedia.
No,
yeah, you wouldn't think so.
You make time for Hawkopedia.
Well, you guys do,
people
and I appreciate
Hawkopedia.
It.
We have to air it. I mean, you have to air it on a game night, so can we do your Hawkopedia?
Please.
All right. Here it is.
Blackhawks Radio. 720 WGN.
Uh-huh.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk.
Chicago.
Hawkopedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
This is where you say, what's the Hawkopedia for today?
What's the Hawkopedia for today, Dave?
Perfect, Wendy. There was some history earlier this week at the United Center, and it's worth a look back in today's edition of the Hawkopedia.
Oh, hang on a minute. Hang on. There we go.
Okay, let's try this again. All right.
No wonder Cochran blew it off.
It's worth another look in today's edition of the Hawkopedia. That's still not there. Tuesday night in the Blackhawks 7-4 win.
I got it, I swear.
What's on today's Hawkopedia?
Cochran sabotaged us.
Dave, what's on today's Hawkopedia?
We're going to talk about Marianos' 500th goal. It came earlier this week in the Blackhawks 7-4 win over the Philadelphia Flyers. Hossa scored in the second period to put the Hawks up 4-0. His 500th goal. He became the 44th player in NHL history with 500, the fifth player to reach the milestone while playing for the Blackhawks, joining Bobby Hull, Stan Mikita, Michel Goulet, and Peter Bondra. Hossa is in his 19th NHL season. He has been a model of consistency. His career high for goals, 45, came 14 years ago. He's had three 40-goal seasons. The other three active players in the NHL with more than 500 goals, Jaromir Jagr had a 62-goal season plus two 50-goal seasons. Jerome Iginla had two seasons of 50 goals or more. And Alex Ovechkin of Washington has had seven seasons with 50 or more. Hossa has scored a fair share of his goals on special teams. 139 power play goals, 33 shorthanded goals. Hossa is eighth in goals among European-born players. Trails a couple of fellow Slovakian-born players who also played for the Blackhawks, Bondra and Stan Mikita, who scored 541. Hossa won't play tonight in Columbus because of a lower body injury, but he could be back tomorrow to begin his quest for 501. And that's our Hawkopedia for today.
A nice tribute to one of the best.
I know he's one of your favorites.
Yep, absolutely.
He really is. We were talking about this a little bit yesterday, Dave. If you score 500 goals in the NHL, that's almost a golden ticket to get into the Hall of Fame, isn't it?
There, I would think so.
I can't imagine him not.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Did he get injured on his 500th goal?
No. He got injured. He blocked a shot.
Okay, that's right.
So
the best thing about him is he's far from done, right? He's not going to – 500 is not the end of his road. He's got a long ways to go. He's going to keep playing and scoring more goals.
Well, you would hope so. He's in great shape. He's 38, I believe, this year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's no reason. You look at guys like Jagr and Iginla, those guys are older than he is.
Yeah.
And so you know, hopefully he's under contract for like the next century.
So we'll take
so hopefully he'll be still skating for the Blackhawks for several more years to come.
Boy, I hope you're right. All right, so Dave Ennett's going to stick around because, spoiler alert, the Cubs did quite well last night, and we'll discuss that in just a little bit as the series shifts to Wrigley Field for Game 6. Possibly Game 7. We'll get
it's about
that.
Ready to get real.
It's gonna exactly. That's what it's gonna do. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill and it's Wendy, and Dave Ennett is here, and we're talking about we were talking about hockey, but now we're switching over to baseball. Our Cub content is sponsored by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking, and by Sloan Water Connects Us. Dave, last night I did something that might have been irrational. Can I tell you what it is?
Yes, please.
I offered both of my daughters. I said, years from now, when you bring me grandchildren, if you have a son, would you please name him Javi Baez?
And they said no.
They both said, well, they said, what's in it for us? They're considering it. If okay. If some money changes hands, I may have a grandson named Javi Baez.
Okay, Javi Baez would be his first name or his first and middle name.
I'm leaving that up to them. That could be his first, middle, last. I don't care. I just want something I want a keepsake.
What if your daughters, one of your daughters happens to marry a Javi guy Baez. With the last name Baez?
Right. She would just then have to name them Javi, and then the rest would take care of
it. Or a daughter named Joan.
Oh, yeah. Joan Baez would be nice, too. It would be nice. An incredible amount of excitement the last couple nights, just when we all thought, all of a sudden the Cubs all come alive at the same time.
Instead of uh-oh.
Yeah. That's the switch.
Hey. I didn't think, I really didn't.
No?
I mean, I thought that things would go the way they've gone.
You've
been
very nonplussed over this.
Well, the other morning, Andrea came in just totally freaked out. Oh, my God, they can't score. They can't hit. This is a disaster.
Though, 20 innings is a big drought, especially in the playoffs.
Well, especially for this team.
Yeah.
Except, look, half of that was against Kershaw, or a good chunk of it.
Right.
And Rich Hill also pitched really well.
Yeah.
Now, that's the one tricky part here, because
who are
you facing tomorrow? Kershaw. And if you don't beat him, then you're going to see Hill on Sunday.
Yeah.
But I think the Cubs are throwing two pretty good pitchers back at him.
Yep.
In Kyle Hendricks tomorrow, and if needed, Jake Arrieta on Sunday.
Can I ask you, this is one of the strangest things in all of baseball. John Lester, as we know, is a Cy Young Award candidate and one of the finest pitchers there is. There's no doubt about it. This guy does everything
I know what you're
right,
say.
Except he cannot, will not, and refuses to throw the ball from the mound or anywhere near the mound to first base. The last time he did it, it sounds like I'm exaggerating.
No,
July of last year was the last time he threw the ball over, because he doesn't trust himself. He has a mental block.
He made a throw last night.
He
bounced it to Rizzo.
Right.
He still threw it.
He had to, because it was, in that case, it was a ground ball. But like just the mere fact of keeping a runner on first base, it's been a year and a half since he's thrown over. And yet other teams don't exploit that.
Well, they will now. Thanks for bringing it to everyone's
attention. They know about it. They know about it. I don't know. It is one of those weird things. It's hard to explain. A guy who could pretty much throw a baseball on a dime wherever he wants to throw it cannot toss it over to first base.
Why doesn't he just wind up before he throws it to first?
I'd take Rizzo's arm off if he did that.
But then he'd be more accurate and he'd feel more comfortable.
Yeah, that's true.
That's one thought.
So they, at this point, like they've given in to the fact that, and you know, the other teams, especially last night, we saw a lot of this, they threaten a bunt because they know, if he gets the bunt, he's going to have to throw to first and he's not comfortable. They take gigantic leads. They dance around to try to make him nervous. You saw that a bunch last night, but they don't do what makes sense, which is steal the base.
Okay, but here's the thing. In 21 innings in the postseason, and he has allowed 14 hits, and he's walked two at 16 base runners over 21 innings, barring whatever errors might have been committed or hit by pitch, whatever. And he struck out 14. He's had as many strikeouts as he's allowed hits.
He's allowed two runs
in 21 innings. So I don't think it's a big concern. If you can't get on base, if you, in some cases, can't make contact, I just don't think it's a big concern on the list of concerns for the Cubs.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it hasn't hurt him so far.
Yep. All right. Well, I'm amazed by it. I love it. I love the fact that guys get on and they dance around. They're like, hey, look at me, look at me. And then he just strikes the next guy out. He doesn't seem to care.
Pretty much.
Here's another question. Ever since I was a little kid, in baseball, they teach you in Little League, the first thing they say is when you're batting, put the label of the bat in the back. That's the way it's always been. Ben Zobrist, front and center on the label on the bat when he's swinging a bat. Yeah. Is that just a good luck, bad luck thing?
I don't know. I don't know with him. You know, guys do things their own way and sort of get used to something. You know, I think you're right. That is what you were always taught.
But yeah.
I guess.
But I bet the bat isn't more susceptible to crack if the label's in front or back. I mean, it's going to absorb the shock of the baseball regardless of what the label is.
Maybe it's got to do with an endorsement deal.
Oh, maybe.
Of some sort.
Maybe. That could be.
Like Matt Caesar's bat. Probably has its own Twitter handle by now, I'm guessing.
Can I ask you, that's another of the strangest things. Anthony Rizzo can't buy a hit. He does everything he can. He borrows his friend Matt Caesar's bat, hit after hit after hit.
Yeah.
Is he using that bat again now?
Oh, yeah.
He used it again last night.
They told the story yesterday. Matt Caesar told the story that now Addison Russell asked if he could use his underwear during the game. He just wants to, everybody wants a part of Matt Caesar.
Is that really a joke?
No, that he said that on the broadcast.
I don't know when to believe you.
Matt Caesar is not on the playoff roster.
Right.
He's there.
He just wants to wear his underwear.
Whatever works.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those superstitious things and try to latch on because obviously whatever it is.
It's working. That
bat, it's helped Rizzo.
Yeah. You know, I just want to say, because we're almost out of time, tomorrow night, you're working over at WGN. You're doing sports for
TV.
WGN tomorrow night, the TV end. What are we going to expect in terms of a celebration if they finally clinch?
I mean, I think it'll be kind of what we've seen before when
times
the Cubs 100? Have clinched on steroids, except you can't really say that in baseball. So
no.
Right.
No.
That bad analogy.
Yes, you can. Say that on WGN.
But I mean, I
TV.
Just think it's going
to
be.
If Sammy Sosa's here, he wants to talk to you. I don't know why.
Right.
Isn't that weird?
I just think it's going to be nuts. I mean, I think this city. And here's the other thing. When not only are the Cubs in position, game six, up 3-2, forget about the last, you know, people are talking about, well, remember the last time?
Nah.
Pryor and Woodgill.
All different guys.
But not only that, it's a Saturday night. It wasn't a Saturday night the last time. People are going to be building up to this all day. It's like an 8 o'clock kickoff. It's like a Monday night football game where people are celebrating all day, gearing up for this event.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine with this crowd. And plus, it's not a work day the next day. So the normal convergence on Wrigleyville after a big win, just multiply that tenfold. I don't know how they're going to keep people out of that neighborhood.
Perfect storm.
It really is.
You've been doing sports for decades, and at some point tomorrow night, you have the opportunity to say the words that we've all wanted to hear for so long. The Cubs are going to the World Series. That's going to fall on you. I can't wait to hear it.
We were all ready for that a couple other times
right, I know.
In the past. And so when it happens, hopefully it happens tomorrow night. I can't imagine how edgy people are going to be on Sunday if the Cubs don't win tomorrow. But yeah. You know, it's possible. So go out. I still think that they will win this series.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll
I say
see what
stay
happens.
In your home. Watch it at home. Board up your windows
right.
Grab the family in a blanket.
It's all you can do. It's all you can
do. It's going to be great.
I can't wait.
Be really fun.
Thanks for hanging out. We appreciate it.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck tomorrow.
Thanks
night.
For letting me get the Hawkopedia on.
Go Hawks.
Why wouldn't we? We love
that's tonight,
the Hawkopedia.
So
that's tonight.
We need
right,
that.
Right. All right. A quick break. Steve with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. It's the Friday edition of our show. Last night, they had this dinner, this Al Smith dinner.
I've got to tell you a little something about the Al Smith dinner.
Yeah.
It is described, it's a major fundraiser for the Catholic Charities connected to the Archdiocese of New York. Until this current election, I didn't pay much attention to this particular dinner. I know audio would surface the next day because most of the presidential candidates would have a lot of fun with one another.
It's just a relief after going at each other. Then they show up there and
You know, it's sort of like the handshakes we were talking about yesterday after the debate. It right. shows. No, it does. It shows it that, okay, this yeah. is an election, but we're all on the same page here and all of that.
Steve, remember yesterday I drew some parallels to the every year they have this big correspondence dinner, which is a grander scale, but it's the same kind of thing. It's the opportunity for both candidates or both parties to really kind of let loose. And it's all in fun. Wink, wink.
And that's the one I was familiar with because usually somebody from SNL hosts it or
yeah,
something.
Right.
Was it Cecily Strong last year?
I think she was 2 years
ago. Larry Wilmore, maybe? Or
yeah, that sounds right.
Oh, yeah.
But in the past, they do
Seth
often
Meyers
go
has
to
done
Saturday
it.
Night Live people, yeah.
And so that's the one I'm all aware of, or well aware of. I really haven't paid attention to this one before until now.
Right.
There's a little montage of all the zingers, both Donald and Hillary. Do we want to hear them?
Yeah. And Steve, it's to my knowledge, it's only been broadcast a few times, right? It's not like the correspondence dinner where they air it. I know last night's, of course, we right. all saw it, but in the past, it's only run, I think, a few times.
Probably, yeah. I mean, in the new cable news networks and the new. But yeah, over the past couple of elections, I think it's
They've
probably been
it.
Run.
All right. So
this one was shown on every station last night just because of what's going on.
They preempted the Cubs game.
And one other thing about the audience now, the correspondence dinner, you know, as reporters and all of that.
Sure.
This is like, you know, when you watch Batman and the Joker would break in on some fancy
yes.
New York City ball.
Yes.
That's what this is. These are all really well-heeled, high-paying New Yorkers.
Right.
These are the elite, if there ever was an elite.
And several, obviously, because of the charity aspect, a lot of religious people.
Catholic.
Yeah. The yeah. cardinal was mopping his brow.
Yes. Yeah.
This is called the white tie dinner. I've never been to anything white tie.
Well, you see, everybody is wearing a tux, and it's a very a dated looking. It is a white tie, but it almost looks like it's from another century. You know, it doesn't
All they
fit
need
in.
Was the powdered wigs. Oh, wait, Donald Trump has one. All right, here is the back-to-back zingers from both of them from last night's Al Smith charity dinner.
Hillary accidentally bumped into me, and she very civilly said, "Pardon me."
That took me a minute.
And I very politely replied, "Let me talk to you about that after I get into office."
I understand I am not known for my sense of humor. That's why it did take a village to write these jokes.
Oh, this one's gonna get me in trouble. Michelle Obama gives a speech, and everyone loves it. It's fantastic. My wife, Melania, gives the exact same speech. And people get on her case. And I don't get it. I don't know why.
Donald looks at the Statue of Liberty and sees a 4. Maybe a 5 if she loses the torch and tablet and changes her hair. My heart rate is 72 beats per minute. His is the most beats ever, or the least beats ever, whichever sounds best. But Donald really is as healthy as a horse. You know, the one Vladimir Putin rides around on.
Oh.
But remember, if you're not happy with the way it comes out, it must be rigged.
After listening to Hillary rattle on and on and on, I don't think so badly of Rosie O'Donnell anymore. In fact, I'm actually starting to like Rosie a lot.
All right. He did have some audio that was not in there, sorry, that was talking about Hillary's here pretending not
here,
to hate.
I have that.
Okay, go.
So, and this comes off the WikiLeaks, you know, where they were people associated with Hillary said she needs to have, or maybe it was her, sometimes has a public stance on an issue and then a private one. And he kind of was referring to that in this gathering of Catholics in New York.
Here she is tonight, in public, pretending not to hate Catholics.
That got a lot
of boost.
That
got some boost.
That's when it started.
Not appropriate.
You know, it's really funny. It ran the gamut. There were some jokes like that I bumped into her. She said, you know, pardon me and stuff. She was laughing hysterically at that. And the pacing for both of them was strange because they would have the audience, then they would lose them, then they'd get them back, then they'd lose them again, both of them. You know, there was a lot of groaning.
His Melania joke was a good one.
That was really funny.
Yeah, that got the best response.
But then he started going off on, he was sort of went into campaign rhetoric about how crooked she was.
Yeah, there was. Yeah.
And it wasn't in conjunction with the joke.
Right.
And I think that's when that's when people started to squirm a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a few moments where Rudy Giuliani was referenced. He was there. And when they would show him, he was not pleased.
Well, one of the jokes was she said, I want to thank honorable guests here, Your Eminence, Cardinal, the Honorable Governor Cuomo, the Honorable Mayor de Blasio, former Mayor Bloomberg, the Honorable Bloomberg, Rudy Giuliani.
Yep.
And they cut to him, and he just was stone-faced.
And that's the perfect formula joke. The setup is everybody's
right.
Honorable, and there's Giuliani. I mean, it's obvious, but he was not buying.
I mean, you just got to shut up and smile.
Right.
You know, just... I'm sure Hillary was, those were forced smiles a lot of times, or with Donald Trump, forced smiles, but you just got to do it.
I think she has a sense of humor. I know it doesn't appear that sometimes.
But on several occasions, as he was busting on her, she was laughing. She was really heartily laughing.
And it didn't look fake.
Yeah, well, I'm sure a lot of times there was a smile there.
Right.
I mean, it was an uncomfortable night. I love things like this.
But I thought the Rob Lowe roast was uncomfortable.
Well, no, this was more uncomfortable than Rob Lowe. This was way more. But, Steve, help me with this, because I know Al Franken was on, was it MSNBC or was
yes,
it?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's on afterwards, and they're kind of dissecting the material. And Al Franken, for people who don't know, is a senator from Minnesota. But prior to that, he was a writer and a performer on Saturday Night Live.
Stuart Smalley.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm good enough.
Yep.
That sounded like George Bush. I'm sorry.
But he pointed something out about...
He said Donald Trump is funny. He said, I've been with him, and he's got a good sense of humor. And he said, you know, a few of these jokes were funny. He said, but I've never seen him laugh. He said...
I don't think I have either. Have you ever seen Donald Trump laugh?
He smiles.
So.
He breaks into a big smile. He said, but I've never seen him actually laugh.
And laughing, as he pointed out...
Is a human quality.
It's a human quality.
Right.
He said that.
When did Rudy Giuliani take a turn for everyone's worst? I remember, I mean, during 9/11, we all, like, what a great guy. That man is awesome. And now it's like...
He's been swinging and missing for years, I think. I mean, he was a perfect man for a moment, a great American leader during September 11th. Absolutely.
When at times, Steve, if I remember correctly, he was supposed to not be in office anymore, right?
The attack came on primary day.
Yeah.
So the voters were going to choose it would have been Michael Bloomberg, but the people to run. So they pushed the primary back and I think the election back a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you remember, he recommended, I think it was his police chief, Bernard Kerik, to be Homeland Security chief under President Bush. Kerik ended up in jail, I think. He flirted with running against Hillary Clinton for Senate and then had health issues or for one reason or another pulled back.
Right.
And since then, he had a run for president himself and was one of those candidates who led early in the polls. But really, there was nothing ever substantive there to maintain him. And he hasn't had a hit in a few years.
Yeah.
And now he's sort of become, you know, this surrogate for Donald Trump and saying things that I think would make a lot of other Republican politicians just... nervous to say.
He did not seem pleased last night. Anytime he was referenced, they would show him, and he was not even close to smiling. He was just kind of like...
It was almost like you had to make an effort to look that unhappy.
Right. I know. All right. Steve also brought up a joke, and we'll discuss it in just a little bit, that's getting some mixed emotions. A Hillary Clinton line that's getting incredibly mixed emotions. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit as well. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about last night's Alfred Smith dinner in New York. Both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton got a chance to take some jabs at each other. We've got a caller on the line, Julie, who also saw last night's event and wants to make a comment or two. Julie, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. I love your guys' show. I listen to it every day.
Thank you.
I watched it last night, and I was just so distracted by the woman in the red dress to the left of both Trump and Hillary.
The cleavage lady.
And like, the one with the red, beautiful red dress.
And white gloves?
Yes, the white gloves. And the nice of my cleavage. And I'm thinking, there's no way if she knew she was going to be right there the entire time, she would have worn that dress.
So
I was like texting my mom. I'm like, hey, every time she's going to take her glove off, she's going to put her glove back on, put her glasses on, touch her phone. She had no idea what to do with herself.
Steve, you know who that was?
I think that's Maria Bartiromeo.
Bartiromo.
Is that who that is?
I'm pretty sure. Because I think I remember her sitting there in the past.
I thought it was the Holland Tunnel for the first 10 minutes. Like, what's going on there?
She looked like $1 million bucks. That's for sure. She looked good.
Yeah, and she was enjoying herself. She was laughing all throughout. But you're right. It was very distracting, Julie, all the way through.
It was. But besides that, it was a great show. And including her, it was a great show.
I agree. It was, wasn't it? Thanks, Julie. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Julie. Steve, you are correct, sir. It was Maria Bartiromo. Fox Business lady Maria Bartiromo's aggressive cleavage drove the internet nuts during the Al Smith dinner.
You couldn't not, if you tried to not notice it, you couldn't. It was
She's
impossible.
Hot. She is really hot. I'm sorry. Is that sexist of
me? Not at all.
I think she's very attractive, and even more so at last night's dinner. Wow.
All right. Hillary Clinton seemed to have a pretty good sense of humor about herself. I'll be honest with you. Both candidates seem to, at times during their speeches, have good sense of humor about themselves.
He is a bad reader, though. Got to tell you.
Yeah.
He really is.
You know, whether you like Barack Obama or not, you have to admit, he has this charisma, and I'm glad he went with being the president, but he could have been a stand-up comic. He's got that kind of timing.
Or a singer. We know he can sing Al Green.
He's got a great voice. There's no doubt about it. But Hillary Clinton had a joke about, it's so nice to be speaking in front of you here tonight. Usually I charge a lot more for these things. Got a huge laugh. She took she was able to make fun of herself several times. Trump, not so much at himself. I mean, he would kind of push it off on his wife and that one joke that we played earlier.
Really funny.
But the Hillary Clinton joke, we played it earlier, but let's just play it all onto itself, that is getting a little bit of flack today, is this one from last night.
People look at the Statue of Liberty and they see a proud symbol of our history as a nation of immigrants, a beacon of hope for people around the world. Donald looks at the Statue of Liberty and sees a 4. Maybe a 5 if she loses the torch and tablet and changes her hair.
All right, now,
what's with the porno music in the background, by the way?
They were making a film in the next room. Ron Jeremy was there.
He was waiting for Maria Bartiromo.
Hey, when you're done with this, I got something for you. Steve, you said that joke offended you.
Well, I don't know if it offended me, but it's hard to be outraged and to rip a guy for sexual assault or sexual discrimination and then to make that joke about it. I wouldn't have put that in the routine.
I don't. I'm not taking it as a sexual assault joke. I'm taking it as, he only notices women that are 5 and up. I didn't think. I really didn't think the sexual assault thing.
I'm seeing it the same way you saw it.
Yeah, and
I didn't get
it
at first.
Oh,
like a 4. I would expect. I don't know. For some reason, it took me a second for her explanation for me to a 4. I'm trying to think. How is it shaped like a 4? I really didn't get it.
What she was trying to get to was the end of the joke was she goes, "I've got a good number for woman 45." Because she would be the 45th
president. Yeah.
So that's where she was headed.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can. I'm just uncomfortable being outraged by something and then using it as a joke. But I have a very limited sense of humor.
You don't.
He's attracted to beauty, Remember that quote he said to Billy Bush?
Yeah.
I'm attracted to beauty. Who isn't?
All right. So, Steve, your disdain for that particular part of her speech reminds me of, for a long time, during the O.J. Simpson trial. I know we're going back a little bit here. But each of the late night talk shows would, on a nightly basis, you had to do O.J. Simpson humor because it was the biggest story in the country at the time. And I kept thinking to myself, it's really wrong of these guys to be capitalizing on the fact two people died in the O.J. Simpson story. You all know that. But like, if you turned on Jay Leno, you saw the dancing Itos, and it was getting big laughs based on Judge Lance Ito.
It's a comedy show.
Right. So in your head, you have to kind of separate, is this making fun of the fact that there's now the ridiculousness of a judge who's become a famous person because of a trial? Or are you saying, I can't laugh at this because when you tally up your scores, two people got killed, you know, and so it's tough. Last night, I understand, Steve, you're not wanting to laugh at this because you're giving in to what that joke really is. But Wendy, like you said, it really is more a joke about Trump just seeing
criticizing
a woman and
rating
them,
but yes.
Yeah, giving them a number as opposed
rating
to
them.
Seeing them as an entity.
Yeah.
You
know? So I didn't think sexual harassment.
Right.
I mean,
at all.
I'm not outraged by it, but I just wouldn't have included it. I think she had enough material there.
Oh, yeah.
To pass that one by. I mean, you know, because they're using that as a reason not to vote for him, and he's a horrible guy, and then to turn it into a joke, I just think is.
But isn't this one of the nights where you put that aside,
right,
and you go, we're here to have fun and laugh at ourselves and our opponents.
So laugh, Donald.
He refuses to
laugh.
He refuses to laugh.
She did have a joke, too, that was nice, where she said, there's so many of my friends out here. You look great. You're wonderful people. I just want to put you in my basket of adorables.
Oh, that's cute.
That's very funny.
And I heard in various reports elsewhere, and Steve, maybe you can confirm this, that there was a reporter or something sitting next to him when they spoke to each other afterwards, and he allegedly said, you know, I got to hand it to you, you really are a strong woman. And she allegedly said to him, regardless of the results, we've got to stick together. Do you know anything about that happening?
I sure hope so.
Because that really is kind of a feel-good moment if that truly happened. We'll do some research on
yeah.
that.
I was watching it closely, and, you know, it looked as if Trump a couple of times, like when she was coming to her chair, like he was kind of maybe reaching to her chair or to sort of engage a little bit, and she was just having none of it.
Hmm.
I could be completely wrong on that, but
yeah.
I hope they had some sort of exchange.
Well, I hope that's true. I'll look into that.
See if we can find out. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Steve has the news. We have a lot more show for you, including at 11:35, Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
I
always
am
wanted
excited.
To meet her. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Didn't we talk to her at another radio station on the phone?
I never have. You may have, but I never have. But I'd I probably will in within the hour.
I think I have.
Yeah. All right.
She taught me a few things, Bill. Let me tell you.
All that's ahead. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Normally, at this time on Friday, Kurt Wagner is sitting right over there here in studio with us.
You know where he's sitting right now?
I don't know where he is.
The prairies of the Great Plains in the state of Nebraska.
That's right. I'm at my parents' kitchen table.
Oh, it's like old times, huh? Did she make you a grilled cheese and tomato soup?
No, but she made these great enchiladas that I've been eating.
Oh.
And all my
We're
other
coming.
Favorite foods.
Why are you there? I mean, not that you shouldn't visit your parents, Kurt, but is there a special occasion? Why would you head out there now?
My mother's birthday was yesterday.
Oh, happy birthday to Mrs. Wagner.
How young is she?
Never mind.
No, don't want to talk. Don't want to talk about
age.
It. Don't want
to
talk.
Well, happy 21st birthday to her.
You know how old she
her.
Is, Wendy? Huh. She's ageless and priceless. I learned that from Michael Sneed.
That's exactly right. That's
ageless
true.
And priceless. That's how she is. What'd you get her for her birthday, Kurt?
His visit.
I got her some spices and myself, and I allowed her to make all my favorite foods.
That was nice of you.
So, well, happy birthday to
Mrs. Wagner.
Carol.
Ma Wagner.
Carol Wagner.
Carol.
And your dad, Robert Wagner, from Heart to Heart, is also on hand.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
All right. So let's talk about this week in television, Kurt. Sunday night, finally, the highly anticipated season premiere of The Walking Dead. Have you already seen the episode?
No, they weren't at the screen. They didn't have it in the screening room. They weren't letting anybody see it.
They are keeping this secret completely covered, and I'm shocked.
Yep.
Although they have to.
Bill, you claim you know.
I know. I do know.
You're going to be wrong.
I do know.
Bill knows, but I'm not sure Bill's right either.
For people who are wondering how I could possibly know, there was a cliffhanger to end all cliffhangers.
Don't
at the
say
end.
It because somebody's going to look it
up. All right. You know what? I won't reveal. You're right.
Because I'm so tempted. You told me and I'm so tempted to do it, I don't want to do
You'll
it.
You'll be disappointed. All right.
I think that clue that you are talking about was a false clue.
I think so, too. They have been so careful about this.
Yeah. I'm not sure that you're going to know, but it's going to be pretty amazing, I think.
At the end of last season, for people who don't know, and I won't give you, I promise I won't divulge too much information, they introduced a new character who did something horrible to one of our favorite characters, but we don't know who it is. They shot it in such a way that you don't know who it is. That will be revealed on Sunday night.
Right, and that character's name is Negan, and he is played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who's been really good in the role.
I believe it's Negan. I hate to correct you, but Negan, you don't watch it.
Well, whatever.
Don't tell your mom I reprimanded you.
So Negan, and he's this guy who wants to take over the world, I guess.
He's a bad man, Kurt.
He had better bats than the Cubs for a while.
He's a very bad man. But, you know, Morgan, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, has said that he thinks that Rick and his group are just as bad as Negan and his group.
He's wrong.
But that Negan and his group just are sort of more gleefully brutal.
Yes.
It's funny, you know, when the world is ending and you have to start making your own groups, you think you're not being rude or mean or bad, but you got to do what you have to survive. It's just we're getting the view that Rick and his people are good people. They're not really.
Right.
They
have some admirable qualities, but they're not really that good either.
Right.
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan brought up the time that Rick Grimes like ripped off the face of some guy, like bit off part of his face.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
And he shunned Carol. That wasn't really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
So, you know, that's what Morgan said. But it was funny when I was at Comic-Con in San Diego earlier this year, I asked Jeffrey Dean Morgan about, you know, what's it like to be at the center, to playing the character who's at the center of this whole thing that has driven people nuts now for 6 months. And he said, at this Comic-Con, it's okay. But I think next year will be a little different. Next year, it's going to be a salute of middle fingers and bad language when I come out onto the stage, because apparently it's going to be somebody that it's going to really hurt.
Can I ask you? You know, I've seen
whoever
him.
His victim is. It's going to really hurt.
Oh, sure. We'll lose one of our friends, one of the favorites on the show. With Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I've seen him in so many movies and television shows over the years. I always enjoy him. Actually, this is a weird trivia question, but he was in the very first episode of Weeds, playing the husband who died. You don't see him again on the show, but he played the husband in that very first episode in a flashback. They show him. And then that was it for him on Weeds. He's been in so many things.
The Watchmen, my favorite movie of all time.
He's great in The Watchmen. Yep. He's the comedian in The Watchmen. In real life, does he seem as imposing as he does?
No, he doesn't. No, he's the nicest guy. I mean, he came up to me. They did a press conference style thing at Comic-Con, and he came up to me because I had interviewed him before in person and just started chatting with me, which was really cool.
That is good.
You know, I didn't go running at him or anything, but I would have.
We all came to love him. Was it Grey's Anatomy?
Where he was on Grey's Anatomy.
He was, you know, in his on his deathbed, and he really was, he's really a great actor.
And then he was on The Good Wife, too. In fact, that scene at the end of, that cliffhanger scene at the end of last season, he flew down to Georgia just after finishing his Good Wife stuff and hadn't met anyone or anything. And they basically just went on, and he had, like, you know, this huge, that scene involves so much dialogue and everything. But, so that was pretty cool. I mean, he was ready for it.
He's a good actor.
But he has said that that's his first character that he really has not been able to find any of Jeffrey in the character.
Really? It's completely foreign to who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he says.
That's what he says.
Yeah, so he says.
But Kurt, they've been running.
He runs around and kicks dogs in private. I don't know.
On AMC, they've been running this promo where it's just, you just see various angles of him, and he does the line from last year where he just goes, "Eeny, meeny, miny, mo," and you go, "Eeny, meeny, miny, mo should not be scary," and yet here I am petrified at this guy saying, "Eeny, meeny, miny, mo."
Well, he is swinging a bat that has barbed wire wrapped around
Lucille.
It. Lucille.
I cannot wait. How does B.B. King feel about that? Because that was B.B. King's guitar.
You know what? We're twins, because I was just thinking about B.B. King when I said that.
We're twinsies.
You guys are twins. Congrats on that. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break and then more discussion with Kurt Wagner. It's his mom's birthday. If you're going to send her a card, do it now. Don't be late on that. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, all the way from the state of Nebraska, Kurt Wagner celebrating his mother's birthday. Carol Wagner, happy birthday. And Kurt, there are some new shows coming our way. Where do we want to start, Bill? Because I'm pretty excited about three things.
You and I are in agreement about this. One of the legends of television is coming back.
Yeah. Carol Burnett is coming back to
TV.
Well, they're doing a pilot. It's a pilot. It's going to be a pilot right now, an ABC comedy, and it does not have a title yet. But she is going to play an older actress who, how's it go? A family gets a chance to buy the house of their dreams, a house they'd never be able to afford under normal circumstances. But they are able to buy it under extremely abnormal circumstances. They must live with the current owner, an older actress played by Burnett, until she dies.
Kind of like the Hugh Hefner thing. Like, remember he put the mansion up for sale, but
you
had to live with him.
That's it, exactly.
And the producers are Amy Poehler.
All right,
she's
great.
We all know and love.
And she's a huge... Amy Poehler has said, I've heard her say it so many times, without Carol Burnett, there's no Amy Poehler because she was so influenced by Carol Burnett.
Right, exactly. And then Michael Saltzman. He is the other producer, and he'll probably be writing it. And what I love about the story is, you know, Amy Poehler was influenced by them, but he actually, when he was first starting out as a TV writer, met Carol Burnett, had some kind of meeting with her, and she decided, she was impressed by him or whatever, and decided to give him some money. So she wrote him a check, said, here, go write something and don't worry about paying your bills.
That's
for a little
amazing.
While. Just get something really great written. And now he's come back around and is writing something for her. You know, and she's always talked about, she always tells the story of when she was starting out that an anonymous person gave her a $1,000 check so that she could do the same thing.
How about that?
Paying it forward. How great is that?
Yeah. So she's doing it now. Or she did it to him. Yeah.
You know what's great about this is for Carol Burnett, if you look at her career, mostly television, some film work, some really good film work, actually, but mostly television. Yeah. But pretty much in the variety vein, Carol Burnett was a master of variety television, but here she gets to play a role. I think this could be a great thing for her.
Yeah, this is actually would be her first sitcom.
Oh, she had Mama's Family.
She wasn't
on
Mama's
Family.
Oh, no, that
was Vicki Lawrence.
She wasn't on it.
Never mind.
Yeah, it spawned from a sketch on her show, but yeah, when that went to series, she wasn't on it.
I love her.
Did you ever see her? There's a movie called Pete and Tilly with her and Walter Matthau that's such a great movie about these people who meet a little bit older in life and fall in love and get married and have a kid. It's it really shows you she was so much more than what we were accustomed to seeing on Saturday nights on CBS. Good. That's great news.
All right. And there's a game show that's coming out that I'm not kidding. I am going to audition to be on. It's not even funny. Go ahead and explain this.
It is funny.
I have lived for this.
CBS is adapting Candy Crush Saga for
to be a game show.
It's going to be a game show. The guy who is the executive producer of Wipeout and Fear Factor will create and executive produce this one-hour live-action game show. And what they're going to do is have some kind of enormous interactive game boards that people will use. Two-person teams will use their wits and physical agility somehow.
But you don't do that in the game. You just press a button, right?
Well,
you need wits and agility.
Do you? All right.
I'm on level 1,277,
oh my
by
God.
The way.
Oh, my God. Is that true? You're not exaggerating?
You want to look?
No, I believe you.
I mean, this game is played on all seven continents.
All right, so if you're on level, what did you say, 1,200 and what?
1,277. I got you beat.
Oh, my God, Kim Gordon, what level are you on?
1,700
something.
Holy crap!
All right, so just take an estimate on this. How many hours do you think?
Who cares?
I'm just curious.
How many hours do you watch TV?
Too many.
All right.
Way
too many. It's something we want to do. We, you know, I haven't missed work. I haven't missed work due to my Candy Crush addiction, so it's not a problem yet.
You
well,
play
maybe
while you're
I
driving.
Shouldn't mention this, but I'm going to mention this. One of the stories about this started with the mobile game, the only mobile game that grandmothers everywhere play.
Thanks.
You feel better now.
I think we have a terrible connection.
Oh, you guys. Oh, no. All right. So my guess is
Kurt.
I hear this, Kurt, and I say to myself, oh, good, more work for Tom Bergeron. Am I right or wrong?
They haven't announced a
Billy Bush needs a gig.
Give it to Billy Bush.
But you know, it'll be Billy Bush or maybe it'll be Donald Trump.
All right. And now keep in mind, this is a game show, but it's going to be an hour.
That's what it says.
Oh, that seems like a long time.
You know what?
Time.
I'd rather just play the game than watch it, I think.
Would you? Yeah.
Although Wheel of Fortune
Well, you know, if they're moving some giant candies on the big game board, then maybe it'll take that long to push them around. I don't know.
All right. When can we expect Candy Crush?
When can I audition?
Wendy wants in.
Probably 2017. It didn't say.
I have no time.
But they just made the deal. So.
All right. Well, we're certainly looking forward to that. What's
coming up someday
for people who like both Candy Crush and great performances? Do we have anything in the great performances category?
Tonight, their great performances on PBS is doing Hamilton's America, which is sort of a behind-the-scenes look at the Broadway and Chicago and worldwide phenomena, Hamilton, the musical.
Yeah.
And it's part of their Fall Arts Festival, and the creator of Hamilton, the musical, Lin-Manuel Miranda, is hosting. So you will see him on there talking about all the stuff that's coming in the Fall Festival. And then this one is just a look behind the scenes. And, you know, there's like interviews with Barack Obama, with George W. Bush.
How did they get tickets? Seriously.
Who does Barack Obama know that got him tickets to Hamilton?
We don't know that they've even seen it. Who knows? Maybe they didn't.
Oh, maybe.
But anyway, I think if you don't have tickets, it'll be one way that you might be able to see some of the show.
So I'll be watching.
Yeah, so that's on tonight at 8, I think, on PBS. But check your local listings.
All right, and then we also want to mention this. This bears mentioning Sundance TV has put together a really great block of television, some of the best sitcoms of all time. Do you have the list in front of you, Kirk? Because it's really an impressive list of what you can watch.
Yeah, so how this is going to work is during the day, I think 5 a.m. Central Time to noon, each day they will show all episodes of one show, episodes of one show all in chronological order.
Yeah.
So, MASH, All in the Family, The Bob Newhart Show, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, and The Andy Griffith Show.
What a great idea.
Yeah, MASH will be Monday, All in the Family Tuesday, Bob Newhart Show Wednesday, Mary Tyler Moore Thursday, and Andy Griffith Show Fridays. And I think they'll do it until they run through all the shows and maybe include new ones. I'm not sure how
that's
it's going to work.
That's a strong lineup. Once
they're done with them. But that's a lot of episodes because they're all half-hour shows. So if you stay home sick one day, get a little nostalgic.
That's excellent.
And what channel is this on again?
Sundance TV.
Sundance TV. I mean, a lot of those shows repeat on other channels already, but this is an interesting sort of bingeable set.
Well, that's,
and they're calling it the set.
And that's just it. You know, with Netflix and all these other ways to do it, you can jump in at the beginning of something. So what a great idea.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll start with the Flintstones and stuff, too.
Maybe.
They could do any of these things.
Right,
Seinfeld, do that in order.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I like it. Kurt, are you back next week, or is your mom's birthday celebration a two-week
event? It's his dad's birthday next week.
Oh, it is?
I'll be back.
You'll be back next week?
Hey, I want to mention two things this weekend before we go. Netflix, starting today, Black Mirror, which is this creepy tech paranoia show, starts at season 3, and it's really good. They're standalone episodes. It's sort of a little Twilight Zone-ish, but they're hour-long episodes.
And the name of that is Black Mirror. I've seen some episodes from season 1. Yeah. I love it. It's so good. Very creepy.
It's season 3 is today on Netflix, and I've seen 2 of them, and one was just amazing. That stars Bryce Dallas Howard, and one was okay. None of them are horrible, is what I'm saying. Then Saturday night, another really fun, weird, quirky show is called Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency on BBC America. That's based on a book by Douglas Adams, who also wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Good.
And it's just this funny, weird thing about a guy who might be an extraterrestrial, a ghost, or a madman, but he enlists the help of this regular schmo who needs to help him solve a murder. And there's lots of strange, fantastic, weird characters.
Sounds
great. Elijah Wood plays the guy who Dirk employs to help him.
Elijah Wood, I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, he's good. All right, Kurt, thank you so much. Travel home safely. That's Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com. It's right there on your internet. We'll take a quick break and then get Kim Gordon's news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
All right. It is an honor and a pleasure to introduce to the listening audience America's favorite sex therapist, speaker, author, and narrator. Now we'll tell you all about that. It's Dr. Ruth Westheimer. Hi, Dr. Ruth.
Hello there, Wendy and Bill. You know what, Wendy?
Yes.
I tell you something. If you say nobody knows me, not true. Look in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
There were people outside here who were waving.
They were.
Of course.
We can attest to this.
At the age of 88, not bad.
Are you 88 years old?
Yes.
My God, you don't look 88.
Oh, fantastic.
Thank you.
Good for you.
I have just followed Dr. Ruth on Twitter. And how many followers? You have how many followers?
Okay, I'm blushing a little bit because I'm not computer literate.
Mm-hmm.
But I have 87,000 people.
Up to 88,000 now.
Up to 88? I like that. And so now I have you, Wendy, and you, Bill.
Yep, we're
all
in.
All right.
We're in.
I tell you what I do, since I'm not computer literate.
Yeah.
I talk, and Pierre Lehu, who I work with for the last 35 years, I also do books with him, and I talk, and he puts it on paper.
Perfect.
And so it's working very well. So he, my Twitter will know that I'm on radio with you, mm-hmm. on WGN.
That's
you
it.
Got
Radio
it.
Radio 720.
Look
beautiful.
At her.
In
beautiful.
Chicago.
She
you're
has
a
YouTube channel, too, and you're coming into town because you are going to be narrating the Birds and the Bees, Songs of Nature and Naughtiness. And you're going to be
wait,
doing
wait,
this.
Naughtiness, you have to say a little bit more with a smile.
All right, go ahead, do it.
Naughtiness. And you have to tell them that it's the Chicago a cappella.
Mm-hmm.
And tell them where it is.
All right. I will tell you that it is at Wentz Concert Hall in Naperville on Saturday, mm-hmm. and then Sunday at the Logan Center for the Arts in Chicago. You can go to chicagoacapella.org to find out all information and to get tickets.
And the org stands for organ in this particular instance because of who you are.
Or orgasm.
Yeah, I hope.
Right.
I hope you both will get there. Make sure either Saturday or Sunday.
I will certainly try to do that.
But if you come, make sure that I see you.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, that you right. find me. 4'7".
Yeah.
I just lost now a quarter of an inch.
Did you?
Not more, because I can't lose anymore. Otherwise, you still will hear me. And you radio people will understand the play about becoming Dr. Ruth is coming to Chicago. They will let you know where it's going to be. But the interesting thing for you, the radio people,
yeah.
is that when I came to this country,
mm-hmm.
they said, Dr. Ruth, if you want to work here, you have to take a speech therapist in order to lose your accent.
Really?
I made $1 an hour. I raised a little girl by myself until
yeah.
I remarried
yeah.
and then had a boy and the girl was adopted. So I couldn't pay a speech therapist. Deborah Jo Rupp, the actress who played me in New York and in the Berkshires, guess what?
What?
She had to take a speech therapist to learn my accent. So
that's
I love
perfect.
That story. So now it's coming to Chicago.
That's perfect.
They will let you know when.
Oh, please
and
let us
I'll
know.
And maybe I'll get on the radio with the two of you.
Of yeah. course.
From New York.
Anytime okay. you want. Anytime. Okay. Ruth, how did the relationship between yourself and David Letterman start? I think a lot of people first became aware of you because of your visits with David Letterman.
Yeah,
how did that heart start?
Okay. First of all, I don't have a relationship.
Not that kind
not
of,
that
relationship.
Sense of,
the word. Of relationship. However,
yes.
David Letterman, all over these many years, has been a wonderful interviewer with me.
Yeah.
Once he interviewed me on a topic I didn't want to talk about, I said, David, I'm leaving. He said, no, 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 I'll do whatever you want. I said, plug my book. <He did. laughs> But this time, David Letterman, I was on 40 minutes. And I know that all of you younger people are listening to him. And he forgot to tell me to sit down.
Oh.
So I stood.
The whole time.
Which was wonderful. 40 minutes, so I had control. Because I was there.
Yeah.
And then I tell you what he did, which he doesn't do for anybody in the world.
Yeah.
He came out with me, out of the studio, instead of doing a commercial, to say hello to my friends.
Oh, how nice.
So I have, he's a wonderful showman.
Yeah.
And I have been on many times. And I do appreciate what he does in terms of radio.
Right.
And how he knows how to get.
He's a great interviewer.
People and how he does. All of the other stuff, not important. I tell you one more thing.
Sure.
Robin, as you know, hasn't been well.
Yeah.
So they hadn't talked much about it. I mentioned Robin in those 40 minutes, maybe, I don't know, maybe 50 times. I said, Robin, with my inimitable R, guess what? Now, every time they do David Letterman, they do any advertisement, my voice with Robin is on it.
Oh, it is.
They didn't pay me for it, but that's okay.
That's all right.
That's all right. Right.
That's fine.
All right. So there's been rumor that you were a sniper at one point.
What do you mean a rumor?
So that's true.
It's absolutely
See?
True. Please, Wendy.
Kevin wins. Look at, he's
our
raising
producer,
his hands.
Our producer told us, but we want to hear it from your mouth. You were at some point in your life a sniper.
Okay, but tell everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that anymore.
Not anymore.
No, no, no.
Concert.
Right.
No, here's the concert. The Birds and the Bees, Songs of Nature and Naughtiness. It's done by the Chicago Acapella. This is their first concert of the new season. You can go to chicagoacapella.org, Saturday at Wentz Concert Hall in Naperville, Sunday at the Logan Center for the Arts in Chicago. Also, the doctor is in, Dr. Ruth, on love, life, and joie de vivre.
Joie de vivre.
Joie de vivre.
Joie de vivre.
Very nice.
Say
it again.
Joie
de
vivre.
Joie
de vivre.
Nice.
Joie de vivre.
It's, you can get that book on Amazon and where better books are sold. All right, back to you. Sniper talk.
So, sniper. Okay, in the book I'm talking about that, I was trained in then Palestine when it just became Israel in 1948.
Yes.
To be a sniper, and I'm a very good sniper, Bill. Watch what you are asking me.
I believe you.
I have never killed anybody. On my 20th birthday, I was very badly wounded on both legs.
Yeah.
In Israel, when Israel was declared. I go to Israel every year. I didn't know I would live in New York my life. I didn't know I would come to Chicago to do a cappella.
Yeah.
And to come to your radio program on
yes.
WGN. However, I was fortunate because there was a wonderful surgeon who fixed me. I was a black diamond skier all of these years.
Really?
And if I find somebody, Bill,
yes.
who is not married.
Yes.
And who doesn't have a family.
Yes.
I can dance a whole night.
Is that true? Wow.
I use that experience
yeah.
of knowing how to throw hand grenades.
Yeah.
I was and am still very much of a Zionist.
Yeah.
Very worried about. I go to Israel every year. I speak Hebrew fluently. I do a lot of radio
mm-hmm.
and television there. And very worried about that we still don't have peace.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So it's true what your producer told you, which means that your producer did his homework.
Yes, he did.
Since I'm a teacher and a professor,
yeah.
I now taught 6 years Yale and Princeton.
Look at
one
this.
One course in the spring. I'm now, at the age of 88, my third year at Columbia University Teachers College. So I'm nice and busy, but I like when people do their homework.
Yes.
You know what they get from me?
What's that?
An A.
An A. You got an A, Kevin.
Right.
Kevin's very happy to
so
hear that.
So now tell them a little bit about the Chicago Acapella.
Boy, you're driving a hard bargain here. I'm telling you.
The woman's a sniper, Wendy. Don't mess with her.
I'm not.
I have to tell you, Wendy, I did the rehearsal yesterday.
How'd it go?
And come, I have to tell you a secret.
Okay.
Oh.
For your listeners.
Okay.
I did very well.
Did
very
you?
Well.
There was only one word that they corrected. Not
what,
bad.
What was
the
it?
Word?
I don't remember what it was. Something.
Oh.
But I said it wrong.
Yeah.
And I was glad that they corrected. But that was all. So it is a delightful group of singers.
Yes.
Very professional. And the two of you have to ask your bosses.
Yeah.
To get there. Okay?
All right. We'll see what we can do.
You know what it is? Why it's called Birds and Bees? Is because they sing a lot of songs about animals and about how they do it.
Birds do it,
bees
do it.
Right? I see on Wendy's face
yeah.
when I say it, she knows exactly what I'm
she
talking about.
She does know.
So I don't have to spell it out.
All right, we have to take a quick break, but you can go to chicagoacapella.org and get tickets to see the Birds and the Bees, Songs of Nature and Naughtiness, with Dr. Ruth Westheimer narrating, Saturday at Wentz Concert Hall in Naperville, Sunday at the Logan Center for the Arts in Chicago. We will continue. And if you have a question for Dr. Ruth, 312-981-7200, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Dr. Ruth Westheimer is in the studio. It's really an honor to meet you, Dr. Ruth. You are in town because you will be narrating Chicago Acapella's first concert of the 2016-17 season. It's called The Birds and the Bees, Songs of Nature and naughtiness. Mm. Did I say it better that time?
Wendy, you said it beautifully. And as everybody who listens to you and Bill knows, that when I talk about the birds and the bees, I think about, and I want you to think about what?
Uppy-downy. Yep.
Sex.
So yeah. I want you to see you there.
Did you hear him? Uppy-downy.
That's what we say. That's the adult way of saying sex.
May I ask you about the book Leopold that you wrote?
So, very interesting. I did a children's book. It's not my first. This one is about turtles. And it fits you, Wendy, and Bill, and everybody who is in the media, because I have a collection of turtles. A turtle, if it stays in one place, it's safe. Mm-hmm. Carries its home on its back. If that turtle wants to move, it has to take a risk. It has to stick its neck out. It could get hurt, but it doesn't move. So I want to teach young people and older people that they have to take a risk. The book is wonderful. Leopold in Latin means the head of a lion, because a lion is fierce. So it fits my turtle book.
Isn't that perfect?
How about that?
Becoming Dr. Ruth comes to Chicago, which I hear, I just heard yesterday the first time, the theater, I'm going to come back on your show.
Excellent.
We would love that.
Did you have a question? Because I have a question for Dr. Ruth,
too. Here's my question. I know we don't have time to go into detail, but what is the biggest mistake people are making in terms of sex? What is the one thing that more people could change and have a better sex life?
I tell you what worries me these days the most, that people go into bed naked without having a relationship beforehand.
Right.
And then they suddenly in bed say, stop. Not possible. In the Jewish tradition, it says, when that part, Bill, listen carefully.
I am.
When that part of the male anatomy is aroused, the brain flies out of the head.
Is that right?
So I want young people to hear the three of us loud and clear to talk about not to go into bed with anybody, not on the University of Chicago, not any other place without having a relationship, without having made that decision to be sexually active, without contraception, without mainly knowing that other person.
You know, the first time you have sex with someone can be very awkward. So if you get to know them first, takes away some of that awkwardness.
First of all, that. And second, in terms of safety and in terms of sexually transmitted diseases, which worry me, there is no question I'm old-fashioned and a square. I still talk about orgasms and erections from morning till night. I still need more scientifically validated data. We still need to know more. We have to stand up and say that any gay person has to earn the respect. Respect is not debatable. So there's a lot of topics that we have to talk about. And it is important for you radio people. You are what is called in sociology significant others. You have the power of the airwaves. We educators know quite a bit about sexual functioning, and that's why I'm doing things like the birds and the bees with the Chicago a cappella, because I want people to start right away to think about that topic and to learn about it.
You know, when you were so very popular, when we were growing up, my mom never talked about the birds and the bees with me at all. She didn't sing it either, like the Chicago a cappella. But now with my kids, I have two boys. They're teenage boys. They ask me questions. Dad runs out of the house because he doesn't want to answer them. I talk to them about things. Perfect.
And you have to say, I want to be what is called an askable parent. I want you to ask me the questions. And then you have to say, if I don't know the answer, I did that with my children. And they're doing it with their children. I have four grandchildren. And if I don't know the answer, I will say, call me back on radio by next week. I'll find the answer. Or I will stand up to be counted to say, I don't know.
Is there any answer you don't know? Because we look to you as the pinnacle of expertise.
Oh, there's plenty of further research needed in order. There are many more things. I just read a paper by Dr. Mark Bleschner. This is something as a psychoanalyst, some new findings about women's sexual organ, about the clitoris. Fascinating. next time I come on radio, I will talk to you about that.
Did you hear the word she just
said?
Yeah,
next time she's on radio. No.
Can I get
an amen?
A tape.
Yes.
Not an amen.
I thought you were going to say, can I get an amen?
Amen too?
Yes.
Boy, is he tall.
Steve Bertrand is tall.
You know what that means. You know what they say about tall men.
Yep.
They have a long inseam.
Yes.
That's really it.
That's a myth.
Wow.
But
sorry,
can
Steve.
Can you get me a
yeah, we can absolutely get you a tape of this. Absolutely.
Listen.
What a joy to meet you. Honestly, we've wanted to meet you. Wendy and I have been fans of yours forever, and you live up to the billing, Ruth. You really do.
Next time, Chicago, I'm coming on your show.
All right. You got it.
We love it. Thank you. And in the meantime, go see Dr. Ruth. She will be out at Wentz Concert Hall in Naperville on Saturday, Sunday at the Logan Center for the Arts in Chicago. What is she doing? Narrating something called The Birds and the Bees, Songs of Nature and Naughtiness, done by Chicago a cappella. She also has a new book out, The Doctor Is In. You can get that everywhere. Amazon, anywhere. Thank you so much. And I don't know how to end things, but continued sex in your life.
I should do, though. I'm back here.
All right. We can't wait to have you back. That's Dr. Ruth Westheimer. We'll find out what Steve, who is tall and living up some of the myths, we'll find out what he has next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder for part two of our Friday show. You want to call in or text in? How about 312-981-7200?
We're all still reeling from our little meeting with Dr. Ruth, and I do mean that.
She is a very diminutive woman.
4'3", did she say, and shrinking?
4'7", I think, was she was, I think she said 4'7".
But she packs a powerful punch.
Boy, does she.
She
fascinating lady.
There is a great picture, which I hope is up on the internet somewhere,
it's
Steve
fantastic.
Bertrand. And then about up to his belt level,
yep,
is Dr. Ruth.
Yep.
And she could take him down. I think she could.
She did.
It looked like one of those pictures you used to see when the circus was in town. Like if Barnum and Bailey's was playing in your neighborhood, they would show, you know, that they had some of the people from the circus posed together. And that's what it looked like with Steve and Dr. Ruth together.
Just too bad they can't wear clown makeup these days.
Right, it scares the kids, so they've agreed not to. She's the most precise woman. I've never had a guest come in, and I know you haven't either because we were talking about this, who says, do you have my notes? Yes, we have your notes. Okay, Wendy, you say this, and then Bill, you say this, and then Wendy, ask me this, and then Bill, you will ask me. And I go, oh, all right, yeah, all right, we'll do that.
But, you know, she seemed a little high strung in trying. Kevin, she wanted to make sure she got a copy of the audio from this.
Right.
And she's kind of barking out orders. And then I thought if she was, in fact, a sniper, she'd be very trigger happy.
Yeah.
She never shot anyone.
She said she never killed anybody.
Oh.
I don't know if she may have shot somebody. You know what used to bother me is for a long time back when I was doing stand-up, whenever people would talk about Dr. Ruth, they would always say, and this little Nazi German woman who talks about sex all the time. And it's so inaccurate because in reality, her family escaped the Nazis. She is not a Nazi, was never a Nazi, just the opposite. So whenever I'd hear a comic always refer to her as that, I'd think to myself, well, you couldn't be more wrong. She's the exact opposite.
She is the exact opposite. And I think she got a little confused with one of your questions.
Oh, she definitely did. We were talking about David Letterman, and she said how great it was to appear so many times with David Letterman and that he's done so much for radio. And then she told us how sick Robin has been, and she was confusing David Letterman with Howard Stern.
Who hasn't?
I guess other people have.
I don't know if anyone has, but...
I didn't want to. She's 88 years old, and she, believe me, anytime I talk to anybody who's in that age bracket and is as active as she is and has a million things going for them, all I can do is just, you know, bow down and say, I hope I'm doing the same when I'm there. I hope I'm doing half of what she's doing when I'm there.
I hope I make it to 88.
I don't see that.
See, I'm going to live longer than you. And that still bothers you.
Yeah, we did this test. Was it a year ago?
Stupid. It was probably right. I've been back with you, 3 years here almost? It was fairly soon after you and I got back together, and there was no falling out. We just didn't work together, and we got back together.
Yes.
I was really excited to be here, and then you got mad at me because, according to this stupid online...
It was a life expectancy test.
And you were so bothered that my life expectancy was more, but you never took into consideration... Women typically live longer than men.
I know that. But there was a checklist of things.
I never smoked. I never drank. I work out every day. I can't believe you're going to live longer than me.
I should outlive you by 50 years.
Okay,
50 to 60 years.
No, you shouldn't.
Something like that.
And
around 50.
And two, it was a stupid online thing.
I know.
It still bothers you.
Well, I'm taking the internet down. You saw what happened in New York. I'm behind that. I shut the internet down. And
you don't even know how to use your phone.
I unplugged it. That's how I stop things. I unplugged them. It's the only way I know how to do anything is unplug it. Steve, are you okay with Dr. Ruth took a shot. I don't know if Steve can hear us yet. He's just setting up in his studio. But Dr. Ruth took a shot at Steve Bertrand.
It told me she doesn't really know what she's talking about.
Oh, my gosh. As soon as Steve walked into the studio, she was mid-sentence and was so taken aback by his size. She's 4'7". Steve, you're 6'3"?
Probably 6'4".
6'4". Steve's getting taller.
I know.
The rest of us are getting smaller. Steve is somehow getting taller. But she said right off the bat, boy, is he tall.
And that's when I said, you know what they say about tall men? They have long inseams.
Yes.
And then she goes, that's not true.
The myth is not true.
Trust me.
Yes. Right.
Yeah,
Steve
but
Steve started to cry.
You notice she kept watching me, though.
She couldn't take her eyes off you.
She could not take her eyes
off
you.
Or Kevin. There was a weird magic with her and Kevin also. You noticed that, right?
Yes, I did.
In all the pictures with all of us that she took, she's standing near us, and in Kevin, she's gently caressing his cheek.
We got to know each other pretty well in the 10 minutes that we, you know, talked to each other.
You guys, she's a sexual dynamo.
And what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
What's wrong with that at the age of 88? Again, I applaud her for that. Good for her.
Maybe she sees a little bit of that in me, and that's why she felt that connection. I don't know.
Maybe. Wendy's you're not buying this at all?
No.
Not even a little bit? All right, we need to talk about you're attending
an event
tonight that I don't understand. You explained a little bit, but I have no idea what you're talking about.
My neighbor Erica is having a threading party, and she sent out little evites, and I was the first one that responded, and I said, oh my God, I will be there, and what do I bring besides my hairy eyebrows?
Yeah.
My bushy eyebrows.
It's going to be you and Martin Scorsese at this party.
God, you would hear screaming. It's an ancient way that I believe the Egyptians, I want to say, would, you know, like people can wax their eyebrows, tweeze their eyebrows. It's just you take cotton thread and you tie it together so it's a big loop where you could do Cats in the Cradle,
mm-hmm.
sort of like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way they figure it out, they twist it and then put it on your little baby. I have little baby blonde hairs under my eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of swirl the thread, and it rips every single hair out in one swoop.
It's painful or not painful?
It's not real. It's a stinging.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get my whole face done because I'm half Italian.
Why would this be the reason to have a party?
Well, because, you know, people sometimes have Tupperware parties,
yeah.
or Longaberger basket parties.
I had not heard of that, but okay.
And this is just
Avon parties. They used to have. I don't know if that's still a thing, but I remember when I was a kid, my mom went to more than one Avon party, and then she'd come back with enough soap for the next 3 years. Yay! Look at all the soap we have. One time we had to move out of our apartment because we didn't have enough space anymore. We had to buy a house because of all the soap.
Well, this is something they do these now, like with massage parties or psychic parties.
Oh, yeah. I've seen
a lot
that.
Of people will just have some, they host it.
Right.
And then there's a particular person, in this case, a threader, who is going to be stopping by.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to get it done.
But somehow, the money exchanges hands somewhere along the line.
Yeah, on the Evite, it lists who's going to be doing the threading and how much the prices are. And I think eyebrows were like 10. Your whole face was 20, which would hopefully include my mustache.
That's
why do you laugh?
I don't know.
I am blonde, but I'm furry like a peach.
Oh, how about that?
So I would like to get that removed. That's why I like nectarines better, because
yeah.
if I eat a peach, I feel like I'm eating my own head.
I think you're very close to pushing Bill over the top here.
I can't believe Whole Foods doesn't sponsor this segment. Why aren't they listening? If you do have the mustache you talk about, why don't you do like a Raleigh Fingers with it? Make it look like you're in a barbershop quartet or something.
Because it's blonde and it would look like an Invisistache.
Oh.
You wouldn't even be able to tell the full regalia of it.
So are you charged at these parties based on how much facial hair you have or how much you want removed?
No, which actually isn't fair because it was $20 for the full face.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, think of people who, like a bearded lady from the circus we were talking right. about. She should be more money than me.
Yeah, you would think.
Because it'd be much more work.
A lot more work.
Do men get threading too? Because I know men get their backs waxed. Think.
Yeah, you could get your back waxed.
And sometimes the bikini line, although really, why?
Do guys get that waxed? You could probably do away with that on your own, I would think. Why go in and have that done? You could do that yourself.
It's hard to wax yourself.
Where's Dr. Ruth?
Right.
It is. Because when you're doing, and I, listen, yeah. I get a bikini wax
every morning
several
the show,
times a year.
In the green room.
Thanks for doing it, by the way.
Wendy and the Giant Beach.
Look, Dr. Ruth just came back. I saw the limo pull up.
I see I'm needed here.
I get it several times a year, but it's cheaper if you can keep up with yourself. But right. now think about where your thigh meets your body. There's yes. a little crease there.
I just was.
You have to put hot wax there, and then you put the muslin strip there.
Yeah.
And then you have to kind of grit your teeth.
It's muslin.
Oh, did I say I'm sorry. Yeah. It is a muslin strip.
Did you say muslim?
I guess I did.
You did? All right.
That would be muslim.
Yes.
And you have to hold your skin really taut.
Yeah.
And you have to just rip it off. And if you had to do it yourself, I know many people would walk into a salon with the muslin strip still hanging there going, I can't do it. I can't pull the trigger. Could you pull it off
it
for
would,
me?
Think, well, you have thought about it. It would be excruciating to do
it
that
hurts.
To yourself.
So threading is much easier, but they don't do bikini lines. So just my little peach.
So
my little face.
So whoever does this tonight, it's not a one time ever event.
You have to keep up with it.
Yeah, like the next time would vary from lady
to
lady.
Last time I got eyebrows. It depends how quickly your eyebrows grow back. And as I learned from my mother, because as a young teen, you know, every girl goes through this where they tweeze them. So there's like two hairs at the end of your eyebrow, and then one, they're really, really thin.
Yeah, right.
If you kept doing that, they wouldn't really grow back, because ultimately they stop growing back as much.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, sure.
So same with threading. Like if you get a mustache wax, some girls have to go every 6 to 8 weeks. I usually do that myself, but with threading happening, I'm going to go whole face.
Oh, why not? Why not?
Get rid of my peach fuzz.
What about Whoopi Goldberg, who has no eyebrows?
She has no eyebrows.
So she would not come to your party, or she would not be interested.
Maybe she has facial hair.
Oh, maybe. All right.
Upper lip, sideburns. I think she has sideburns.
No, she doesn't have sideburns, does she? I told you there used to be a woman at the Osco by me in... I probably shouldn't be that specific on where. Somewhere in the continental United States near me in Evanston. I don't want to be specific. But there was a woman who had sideburns which became almost like a goatee. You know? And
Was it intentional?
No. Well, I don't know. You know how like your whole life your parents say, don't stare. What are you doing? Don't stare at somebody. But it was impossible. It was just, it was so pronounced, you know?
There are some conditions that cause women to grow more facial hair.
Right, I know that.
Polycystic.
Fibrosis?
No.
No?
Ovarian disease or something
Does
like that.
That. Speed
I believe
that up?
You can sometimes grow more hair. There are things that cause that to happen.
Oh, maybe. I don't know
Would
her backstory.
Would you like me to invite her tonight?
Yeah.
Do you have her name? Did
I
you
do.
Read her name tag?
Yeah, I have that in my. It's in my wallet. I never thought I'd need it, but look, here we are today, and I do need it.
I'm just very excited to go to a threading party. That's all.
It's going
to
be fun.
You want to come?
Are you live tweeting it?
That's a great idea.
You should do it.
I should do that with... But see, you won't even honestly be able to tell that much. Like, I
you
could say half and half.
You should live tweeze it. I just invented a whole new format.
You're funny.
Think about that. All right. A quick break. A lot more show. You know how to reach us. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, I hit it twice. Hit it one more time. Oh, I hit the wrong button.
That's why.
All right, I have a bulletin that I would like to report.
Oh.
We all took pictures with Dr. Ruth, and I was trying to upload mine onto Twitter.
Right.
Because then it's connected to Facebook, so blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to upload the whole morning.
Uh-huh.
You both are listening to me.
Yes.
Complain about this.
Yes.
Kevin said he can't do anything on Twitter. Was it hacked? And I say, oh, my God, it was hacked. And you said, yeah, I know.
Yeah, early this
Why
morning.
Why don't you guys help me when
nah, it's more fun to watch you struggle.
But that was mostly on the East Coast and has been resolved.
Entirely on the East Coast.
It is not. As of 26 minutes ago from USA Today, at least two successive waves of online attacks blocked multiple major websites, making it impossible.
Impossible.
Well, that's powerful.
For many users on the East Coast to access Twitter, Spotify, Netflix, Amazon, Tumblr, and Reddit.
Oh,
Ken
no.
Bone's happy about that.
Yep.
The first attacks appear to have begun around 7:10 a.m. this morning. They were resolved at 9:30, but a fresh wave began.
Okay, really?
Bill, so you want to get the map out
and show it?
I cannot get
all...
on Twitter. Kevin, can you get on Twitter?
No, but I'm on Reddit.
I'm on the Twitter.
Has it updated? Did you try and post something? It says tweets aren't loading right now. It's
yeah,
been going
Cubs
on for the last
3-1 right now.
You're fine. Then. You're up funny. To the moment. You're fine.
My last update was 1 hour ago.
All right, so that is unusual. But early this morning, they were saying it was a problem strictly on the East Coast, that there was nothing going on here. But now, if this
Dude,
is true...
I got a little circle that keeps spinning that
I
won't load.
I can't get on either, Wendy. Uh-oh.
Honestly?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Okay, put that in your pipe and smoke it, smart butt.
Uh-oh.
He said it wasn't happening here. The cause was a large-scale distributed denial of service attacks, DDoS.
Those were DDoSs.
Against internet performance company DYN that blocked user access to many popular sites. DIN, I guess, DYN, reported the sites going down at 11:10 a.m. or 7:10 a.m. Eastern Time. What's UTC? 11:10 a.m. UTC.
I don't know. I'm not sure what UTC is.
It's some time zone.
But I think I went to college there.
I was going to say, it's University of Texas Chrysler.
I did go to college there.
It began monitoring and mitigating a DDoS attack against
you
our...
You can say real words. You don't have to spell them out. We're all adults.
This is all getting more confusing, but...
But at least you can distill it for us here.
Guys, this is a cyber attack.
Well, yeah. They were trying
it
to...
Is it definitely,
is. Steve?
Yes.
We know that for a fact now?
The Department of Homeland Security was monitoring the situation, but at this point... they don't have any information about who may be responsible for this malicious activity. But it's definitely a hacked thing with all these things.
Wow.
They know where to get us where it hurts, right in the Twitter.
Absolutely.
That would bring, seriously, that would bring the country, should this extend to the whole internet, and this is crazy because for thousands of years we were fine without an internet, but at this point, society would take a huge hit if the internet went down.
There's a company, I think it's in New Hampshire, called Dyn. And
that's what I'm talking about,
yeah,
DYN.
They were the server, yeah, that was
words
hit.
Words come out of my mouth? Do people hear them?
I didn't hear any. So what about Dyn, Steve?
I'm sorry, I didn't realize, Wendy, that you had said that was hit. So
yes, and it's Twitter, Spotify, Netflix, Amazon, Tumblr, and Reddit.
So, Bill, things like Twitter and Netflix and Spotify.
I'm going to have to.
But seriously?
They're all affected.
Are Twitter and Netflix affected, Steve?
So far
all
they
right.
are, yeah.
All right. And Spotify is
no,
too.
No, you're right, though, Wendy. It's not funny because this is exactly what we're talking about when it comes to the Russians hacking email or cyber attacks, and it does look as if there's something like that going on right now.
And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the newsroom, you do get a lot of information on Twitter. I know I like to follow Twitter to find out what's going on.
Sure, of
and
course.
I cannot post my picture of Dr. Ruth. That's what really upsets
me. Well, then the terrorists have won.
They have.
That's what they wanted to do, and they've succeeded.
Maybe it's Dr. Ruth.
Oh, my God. Can
it's
I just
not
go
Dr.
home
Ruth.
Now
no.
and start my weekend early?
No.
All right, we have to take a break, and then there's a weird thing that's going on in the world, aside from the hacking.
It's the craziest thing. Can I just quickly set this up? There's video of a boat in Michigan,
it's
off the coast of Michigan.
A ship
that isn't really there. I know that's, you go, what does that mean? A man videotaped a ship off the coast of Michigan, and it's not there, and we will have that guy. This has gotten millions of hits on. Remember when we used to have online? They don't have that anymore, but they used to have online. So we'll talk to him right after the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WG. Oh, wait, is it right after the news, or is it later on?
I think it's coming up right after the... Yeah, right
it
after
is.
The news, all but right. Could you hold your tongue and say, I was born on a pirate ship?
I was born...
No, careful!
An unusual sighting on Lake Superior has people wondering, is it a lighthouse, perhaps an oil rig, or some sort of paranormal phenomenon? While recording a music video shooting iconic Michigan landmarks, Jason Asselin and friends were watching a rainbow in the distance when they spotted something strange on the horizon, something the group had never seen before. Several miles off the coast of Marquette, Michigan, a tall, eerie, unidentifiable object appeared in the water.
This is the strangest thing. In Michigan, there is quite a mystery going on. Jason Asselin was out, as you just heard, filming a video, filming out on the lake, when all of a sudden this giant image of a huge sailing ship appears, except for one small problem. It wasn't actually there. What? Jason is on the line.
I am.
How weird is this?
Very.
All right, we all saw the video, and if your internet is not down, you can go look it up, and it really does look like a tall ship in the distance.
Yes, it does.
All right, Jason, so walk us through this. Paint this picture for us a little bit. You're out there shooting. You got the video camera. You're not looking for any ghost ships, certainly. You were out shooting, I think you said, was it a music video?
Well, we were shooting that earlier in the day. We were just there to watch the sunset, just to chill out for a little bit before a long drive ahead. And it just appeared out there. Fog kind of rolled in, and Kevin said, "What is that?" And I said, "Well, must be a ship. What else would be out there?" And it wasn't a ship. It wasn't anything, apparently. I guess it was a mirage, but...
How do you know? Did someone get out there and see that there was nothing there?
Well, that's what people are telling me. I mean, otherwise, you have other options. It could be Jesus walking on water with his staff.
I don't think so. He'd be giant. I got to be honest with you. It looks like Bigfoot. I know that sounds crazy.
Bigfoot.
It looks like, if you look at the image, it looks like that footage of Bigfoot. The footage where it's walking through the woods. That's what it looks like.
Kind of out of focus.
Grainy.
Yeah. So,
okay, now I find it funny that that you brought up Bigfoot. You know, Bigfoot.
Is that the name of your band?
Well, no, Bigfoot, big hairy beast, and you're getting waxed later on tonight.
Oh my God.
It does tie in. Right, good call.
Oh my God.
Good call, Jason.
Getting heckled by the guest. Thank you very much.
Give us some dimension. Like, how tall would you have estimated when you first saw this and you said to yourself, well, that's a big sailing ship, like the size of a standard sailing ship, would you say, like a couple stories tall?
You know, I've lived up here a few years, and I've seen quite a few big boats out there, and this thing appeared to be, like, miles offshore, and it was just too tall to be that far away. We really thought it was a ship, and we went about our business. Didn't even think twice about it until a couple of days later. I got home, loaded on YouTube, and went to bed, and the next morning I about had a shock. And
It went viral.
I've been on YouTube for 7 years, and I've always been trying to get the viral video that they discuss and they talk about. And I didn't expect to get it from that 60-second video that I loaded.
It's pretty freaky. It really is.
So at the time, you say to yourself, well, no harm can come to us. It's just either a sailing ship or what appears to be something like that. Do you call local authorities? Do you put in a call to police? What are they going to do? They can't do anything, right?
Coast Guard, I would imagine.
Coast Guard.
Not the police.
The mysterious disappearing Coast Guard. You call them.
No, and you know what? Most people probably saw that with their naked eye, as we were, but I just happened to have the camera. I mean, what do they think going home and posting on Facebook and, you know, whatnot, or Twitter if they have it? I do, by the way.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's just.
Jason.
You sound like a fun guy,
Wendy,
Jason.
Are you laughing at me?
No.
No, I'm laughing with you.
No.
Okay.
Jason, I was trying to figure out, I was going through a couple of different websites where they were discussing this last night, and somebody said that much like, you know, when you're driving on pavement in the summertime and you look up ahead and it looks like there's water in the road, and then you get there and it was just kind of a mirage. They're saying that somehow.
Sometimes there's water in the road.
Well, sometimes there is water in the road, right? But they were saying that
or
maybe.
In a desert, you see that a lot.
So
right.
Maybe that there was some kind of an effect like that on the water, that because of the temperature or something.
And maybe mist in the air.
It created a steam, a steamy mist or something. Is that possible, do you think?
That's the nerdy look at things, you know, with Halloween coming up. I'd like to think that it was actually just a big ghost ship with Bigfoot on it. But
yeah.
Now, do you know, you're familiar with the area because it was at Fox News, or no, like a Fox affiliate. Actually, that's the video we saw.
Yeah, that was the Fox video that I've been laughing at, because it's the guy's voice is just like totally weirded out when he's talking about it.
It is pretty funny.
Right.
Imagine this. Okay, so he had mentioned that it's near like a ship graveyard or something. Are you familiar with that?
Lake Superior itself is a ship graveyard, almost like Lake Michigan, but I mean, with the locks up there and access to Canada, there was a lot more shipage, you know, back in those days.
Sure.
I like to believe, I think, that it was a ghost ship.
Well, they're saying thousands, right? Am I getting the number right, Jason? The thousands of ships have crashed in those waters in and around the area.
You know, it was out there still swimming around looking for land.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So does this spook you to any degree at all, or do you just move on?
I just move on and hope to find the next viral video.
Yep.
All right. Well, since we got you, what's the name of your band, the music you were working on, the music video?
That was actually somebody that was up here filming from the Detroit area, and I was just kind of taking them on a tour of the UP, giving them some good backgrounds for their shots, and I was doing a lot of the filming. Somebody else is going to edit the video, but that was Kevin V. Klein of Detroit that I was shooting that for.
Excellent. All right.
Well, they're going to have some pretty good video for their music video with the ghost ship.
You know,
in the
we discussed. I said, you know, you're probably going to have to throw this ghost ship thing in just because. You know, I mean, why not?
And just to do it with stuff everybody's talking about, get a clown or two on the ghost ship. Then you got everything covered.
Oh my God, the clown issue. You know, I just seen a memo from our local elementary school posting that clown outfits will not be allowed this year.
Yeah, they're taking them out of all the Halloween stores here too.
I was a clown last year at a haunted house locally.
Really?
I had some of the best fun and best scares of my life. I actually put a YouTube video of that up, that was great. This year, not so much.
No?
All right, well, keep putting ghost stuff up, because that seems to get you going viral
Jason. I just want to say real fast that I'm jealous of you guys for getting the photo with Dr. Ruth today.
Oh, yeah.
Were you listening to the whole show before you were on?
Oh, for a little bit, last half hour, you know. Enough to know about your interesting night you're having tonight.
The threading.
Yep, can't wait.
The threading, as she calls it.
Maybe there will be a ghost threader.
I'm radio, so we have to keep it clean.
Right, right. We do. Jason, congrats on all of a sudden being a kind of a national celebrity. Everybody's talking about this video, and we'll put a link on our Facebook page. If people have not seen it, it's very peculiar, very strange.
I've got a lot of weird videos. You know, come check them out. I got a guy carrying a deer on his shoulders while riding a bike in the snow. So that's always a fun one to watch. You've
piqued my curiosity, I have to be honest with you.
Look for it, find it, you will.
All right, thank you, Jason. Have a good weekend.
Have a great day. You too.
It's Jason Aslin, the man who filmed the ghost ship in Michigan. If you haven't seen it again, it is at our Facebook page. Try to figure it out for yourself, because I've seen it a couple times now. I can't figure it out. I don't know how they did it.
He's too comfortable on radio. He's
very comfortable. Very comfortable. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I just want to briefly say the internet has been hacked. Now Donald Trump is blaming Hillary Clinton.
What?
No.
That's not true.
No, it isn't.
Come on.
But can I tell you that this was earlier today, there was a hack. It was a server. It's not actual websites that are being hacked. It's a server that affects you accessing these websites. Mm-hmm. And it happened on the East Coast this morning, and there's been a second wave of this. And just to name some of the websites that are affected, Business Insider, which, of course, listed our sexy scientist at number 13.
That's right.
Lucianne Wachowicz, so you can't go look at her picture. Business Insider,
and
CNN.
And this needs to be fixed. Tootsuite, Wendy, and I rarely say that.
Tootsuite is down, too.
Tootsuite.com is down?
Yes.
Where am I going to buy my toots?
People are going to think you're a drug user. Okay?
I'm not.
CNN, their website's down.
All right, that's bad.
Etsy.
That's bad.
Grubhub.
Very bad.
Guardian.co.uk. HBO Now.
And these are down only on the East Coast or more spread out, or do we know?
This is from Gizmodo. And all these sites, a list of websites that readers of Gizmodo have said that they're having trouble accessing. People.com, PayPal, Okta, which a lot of places use as their business website, you know, when you're off-site and you want to see your pay stubs and all that. Pinterest, I don't know what I'll do. PlayStation Network, Reddit, Spotify, Squarespace, Twitter, UrbanDictionary.com, Yelp is down. Credit Karma. This is kind of scary if you're thinking this is being hacked, because a lot of people have their stuff at Credit Karma.
Well, PayPal's the one that would destroy
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
That would be awful.
Netflix, Fox News, SoundCloud, Ancestry.com, so you can't do any of your family tree searching right now. Xbox, uh-oh, that's going to be problems tonight when I get home.
Yeah.
Wall Street Journal, Mashable, Weather.com, Bluehost, which I know a lot of people host websites and they use that as a server, Zillow.com, and numerous other ones. So this according to Gizmodo.com. If you're having trouble accessing your Twitter, Facebook is still going at this point.
Yeah.
This is
That's quite a roster.
This is some cyber attacks going on. In
all
my
right.
opinion.
So the first round, I don't know the exact time, but they had mentioned early in the news this morning.
7:10 Eastern time this morning.
It was resolved fairly quickly. I mean, when you think about all that goes into a hacking like this, it was resolved fairly quickly. I don't know with that list you just mentioned if it's happening as quick as it did last time, but that's quite a chunk of the internet traffic.
Absolutely. Facebook seems to be working at this point.
Wow.
Don't know what it's about, but we will keep you posted on that.
All right. I was mentioned in a news story
I
earlier.
Know.
So I just want to address that, if we may, for
do
a second
Do we have
or
that
so.
Audio? Steve, do you have that audio that Kim Gordon played at the 1 o'clock news?
I don't know if Steve's available.
I'm sorry. What's this?
Kim Gordon played some audio of one celebrity, Bill Leff.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah.
Do you have access to it?
Yeah, I can get there.
All right.
Unless the internet's down.
No.
All right. Kim's telling him where to find it.
I would just
Kim
use
is
that
telling
as
me
an
once
excuse
again
to
where,
everything
where
today.
To go.
Oh. All right.
We're not on okay. the air yet, so don't worry.
No. Later on in the show, though.
I'm sorry. You're.
If you have it, that would be a nice little setup to what you're going to talk about.
All right. You ready?
Yeah. Yes. Here's the clip.
Wild thing! You make my heart sing! You walk everything.
Those voice lessons with Yoko Ono paid off, didn't they, Wendy?
I'm telling you, that's awesome.
That's
that was
nice
like
of
one
you.
Of the best parts of the movie.
All right, so that was a clip of me from the classic film Major League. And as you know, in the movie, it's about the Cleveland Indians potentially going to the World Series. That's pretty much the whole basic premise of the movie. Well, now in real life, the Cleveland Indians are, surprise, going to the World Series. And Charlie Sheen, my co-star in that movie.
Who was Wild Thing, right?
His nickname was Wild Thing. He was a relief pitcher. Ricky Vaughn was his character's name. Charlie, who's a huge baseball fan, not just an actor, not just a dangerous human being, but also a huge baseball fan, said to Cleveland, I would like to come and throw out a first pitch, because Cleveland said last week that they were going to go and get some of the notable Cleveland Indians from the past several years. And every time there's a World Series game in Cleveland, so that's games 1 and 2, and possibly later in the series 6 and 7, some of your favorite Cleveland Indians players will come out and throw out a first pitch. And Charlie said, well, I'm kind of a Cleveland Indian, kind of. I'd like to do it. And they conveniently turned that down.
I think they totally should do it.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Why don't you do it? We could probably get you to do it. And you're
because I want the Cubs to win. That would
America.
Be bad. That would
oh,
be
yeah,
bad.
Now, is this, and forgive me for not knowing this, but since the movie was released,
yeah.
Major League, which you were in, and Major League 2.
Yeah, I didn't do the third one, Wendy.
Why is that?
I found the script to be ridiculous and unbelievable, and they also did not ask me.
That was my next question.
Yes.
Darn. They missed the boat there.
Yes.
Have the Cleveland Indians gotten close to the World Series since that movie was released?
They have gotten close. They have not been in the World Series.
Oh, okay. So this is the first time since...
Yeah, since the movies came out.
They should have Charlie Sheen do it.
Why not?
It would just be like a funny throwback, and it really relates to them.
Can I tell you, over the years...
Is Euchre going to do it?
No. He's affiliated with the Milwaukee Brewers.
No, I guess.
Over the years, I can't tell you how many hardcore Cleveland Indians fans have said... That's our favorite baseball movie, because it really captured the flavor. And we know this better than anyone in Chicago. When you've just got this piece of your heart that's just dedicated to a sports team, and year after year after year they don't win. Who knows that more than us?
Yeah.
But in Cleveland, they have a same sense of that. And that movie means a lot to a lot of people. And it would be such a nice gesture to bring in the guy that was the star of the movie and have him, all you're doing is throwing out a ceremonial pitch. He's not actually going to pitch in the game. He's just going to throw out a pretend pitch. Let them do it.
I think they should totally do it.
Right.
There'd be more press, more people watching.
Yeah. Well, that won't be... If the Cubs and the Indians are in the World Series, that won't be an issue. There'll be...
It's still kind of cute and nostalgic.
Yeah, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm very surprised that they're saying no to this. So their search is still on. They're still deciding who they're going to bring in to throw out the first pitches. But they have said to Charlie Sheen, thanks, but no thanks. We're going in a different direction.
What if they asked you?
If they asked me?
Yeah.
Oh, I would do it. I would. They're not going to ask me. But the fact that I'm rooting for their opponents is...
Well, you could go out there and wear a Cubs shirt. I've got this all figured out.
Do you think Allstate would insure me that day? Because I don't think they would.
Yeah, I don't
think that's the last you'd
see. Come on, people would be talking about it forever.
Did you see that dope get killed at the baseball game?
While singing Wild Thing?
Right. He threw out the first pitch and everybody in the stands threw a pitch at his head. They killed him. All right, let's take a quick break. Steve has the news and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Did you say MLB.com was down?
You know, the Cranes was saying that, and then others were saying the Cubs site was intermittent, so...
That's not good timing, considering...
Terrible timing.
The Cubs are playing tonight.
They're not playing tonight.
Oh, tomorrow night. Yeah. Sorry. All right, they have a whole day to work on it. Blackhawks tonight, and I heard you say that's intermittent as well.
We were having trouble getting on the Blackhawks site here in the newsroom, yes.
How about that? This has been a bad day for the internet.
Taxville, man.
I know. If you watched last night's Cubs game, or if you watched the night before's Cubs game, or if you've ever seen a baseball game in your entire life, you probably noticed that umpires don't always get their calls right. Toby Moskowitz joins us right now. Toby is a professor at Yale, and I happened to catch him on an episode of Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel a few weeks ago talking about this exact problem that umpires, like all of us, are flawed, except that their job is to not be flawed. Toby, thank you for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's go through the paces of how I got to be aware of you there on HBO, on Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. HBO asked you to do a study for them, correct?
Yes, I'd done some work on baseball pitches for my research, looking at, you know, judgment biases people make. That's sort of one of my areas that I focus on. Mm-hmm. And they had asked me specifically to look at this question of error rates on called pitches in Major League Baseball and calculate a few things. So that's where it started.
All right. So most of the study, if I remember correctly from your report there on Real Sports, was for those pitches that I think most of us refer to as borderline pitches. There's an area within the strike zone that's kind of right on the edge there. That's where the borderline calls are made, and they were messing them up pretty regularly.
Yeah. In fact, what we did was we looked at the, you know, think of them as the money pitches, right? These are the pitches where the umpires really earn their money. So these are within 2 or 3 inches of the edge of the strike zone on either side. Now, just to be clear, they're not borderline in the sense that, you know, you could call it either way. There's a definite right answer here.
Sure.
But the umpires get it wrong about 1/3 of the time.
Jeez.
1/3 of the time.
Now, in that area.
In last night's game, I don't know if you watched the Cubs-Dodgers game last night, but there were three major calls that were reversed in one game. And then there were plenty of pitches that if you watch the game, you say to yourself, wait a minute, that was 2 inches beyond the strike zone. That was 3 inches high. That was an inch below. But that happened regularly, and that's a playoff game with huge implications.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big Cubs fan. How upset were you with that Lester pitch? That,
terrible.
I thought ended the inning.
Right.
Oh, God. Yeah, this happens routinely, and the playoffs are no exception. It's heightened there because the stakes are so much higher. But it happens routinely. And look, to be fair, the umpires are the best in the business. This is the best humans can do. It's just that we can't see a 95-mile-an-hour slider on the corner of the strike zone and judge in an instant whether, you know, it was to the right or to the left of the edge of that strike zone. It's really hard to do. Machines can do it so much better.
Will we ever get to machines calling a game?
Oh, this is the golden question. This is the best question of all, isn't it?
It is. You know, it's funny. It sort of depends on what your objective is, right? I mean, if your goal is to get the right answer, there's no question you should go to the technology. We do it in tennis. We've let, even in baseball, which is historically just not embraced progress in technology, they've still made advances, right? We didn't used to use batting helmets. We learned that was probably a bad idea, right? So, you know, let's embrace it. On the other hand, it's going to take a while. Technology's there. The irony is Major League Baseball uses it to train their umpires, but they won't use it during a game. And you don't even have to use instant replay. It can literally just call the pitches in real time. It would be useful to the umpire would still manage the game,
but he wouldn't have to worry about whether that pitch was a ball or a strike. You would get a much more accurate picture of it.
Baseball purists say if you do that, it takes the human element out of the game out. Do you think that's the case?
Well, it takes the human error out of the game. And I think what's you know, problematic with it is if it were just error, you know, where there's no bias towards one team or one type of player, you could argue, okay, that's fine. Maybe we like that. But the thing is, these are predictable. Some of the research I've done, which I didn't even get into with HBO, is that it varies by pitch count in a predictable way. It varies by the type of batter. It varies by the home team gets their more than their fair share of biased calls in their favor versus the away team. So when you start adding it up, it's not just that it's error. These are just mistakes. They're biased. They favor certain types of players and certain types of teams and certain types of situations. And I think that makes it a bit problematic.
Forgive me for not knowing this, but does like a home team, they don't pick their umpire,
no,
do they?
No.
So why are they biased to the home team? Just because they're feeling, hey, we'll let the home team win?
Not at all. I think it's a natural condition of human psychology, something called social influence. Imagine a 95-mile-an-hour pitch with a bunch of spin just lands on the corner of the strike zone. You've got a split second to determine whether it was a ball or a strike, and 40,000 fans are darn sure which way it should go. It tends to influence your perception. That's basically what happens.
That is really interesting.
They said something in the report, again, on Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel on HBO. They were saying that it's human nature to want to kind of be accepted by the group around you, you
it
know,
makes
the fans.
Sense.
So do you want 40,000 people mad at you, or do you want 40,000 people cheering the fact that you called that a strike, you know?
And even if you don't care about that, I think sometimes these guys just don't know, right? Imagine, you know, the pitch came across the plate, and you really don't know if it's a ball or a strike, but you hear the crowd roar, they saw it, and you sort of think, you know, maybe they saw it better than I did at that moment, right? I mean,
yeah.
You can't do that when you're umping a game.
But they do it.
I guess.
I think they do. It just, you know, there's been some really cool studies that have looked at this. You see the same thing in soccer. And one experiment had a bunch of soccer referees where they had them look at tackled calls and call them one way or the other.
Yeah.
And they showed them to these guys with and without the volume. So you could hear, in one case, you could hear the crowd. In another, you couldn't. When you couldn't hear the crowd, they tended to call them evenly.
Oh, wow.
That was kind of neat, I thought. And then when you could hear the crowd, they tend to be very biased towards what the crowd thought in terms of the tackle. So,
Toby Moskowitz is our guest. Professor at Yale just did this great study. HBO asked him to do it about the accuracy of umpires. We're getting some calls in at 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll get to your calls and your thoughts. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are talking. I am sorry I didn't see this.
You got to see it on Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel on HBO. It's tremendous. Toby Moskowitz is our guest, a professor at Yale, who did this great study about the accuracy, or I should say inaccuracy, of umpires getting, is this possible, only about 88% of the calls correct. That seems like not enough to me.
Yeah, and look, and to be fair, they've improved over time. It used to be in the lower 80s. And what's ironic is they've improved because Major League Baseball uses the technology to train them, but then won't use the technology to actually get it right.
Yep.
So it's just a weird thing. So,
all right, Al has called and wants to talk to you. Al, this is Toby Moskowitz. You had a question?
Yes, Toby. I love what you're trying to do here in terms of the data, but let me ask you this. You know, I watch the strikes as Bill and Wendy have talked about. It appears to be a strike or it's not based on the replay. But the question I have for you in your research, have you noticed any higher percentage of mistakes based on when the umpire is in the slot? And what I mean by that is when the umpire is in the slot. And that's when he's in a position between the catcher and the batter, and he's trying to make a call on the outside part of the plate. I've seen consistently the last 20, 30 years, more than half the time they don't get that call right because physically they can't see that pitch. You follow me?
Yeah, I do. That's an interesting statement. I have not looked at that per se. I've heard that before, and in fact, some umpires, anonymously at least, will tell you that it's true. Those are just harder to call. The closest thing that's related to that I have looked at is you do find that the calls are a little worse for left-handed hitters
than they are for right-handed hitters. A little worse in the sense they make more errors. And one of the reasons is that because the majority of hitters bat right-handed, the umpires sometimes don't realign their position to get a better look. And so you see a little bit of that, but not exactly the thing that you're looking at. But we don't have measurements on where the umpire lines up, but it'd be very easy to do if you went back and looked at the film.
Well, one other quick question. A lot of times, like a pitcher like John Lester, when the ball will cross over the plate, almost like diagonally, it seems like the umpire is making that call based on the final location of the ball versus where it crosses the plate. How do the umpires, if you talk to them, how do they reconcile that to make a ball or strike call?
I think it's very difficult, right? The human eye doesn't work at those kinds of speeds. This is where the machine, you know, it's impossible to think that a human can do better than a machine on these kinds of things, right? So on this dimension, the one you're mentioning here, a machine which can measure can measure where the ball is, you know, at every instance, every millisecond, in three dimensions, you can get this very, very accurate. We can't do that. So I think a lot of it is based on experience with the umps. I think they have a feel for it. And, you know, the problem is, too, I've talked to players about this. They'll say to you, look, we're okay with umpire mistakes. We just care more about umpire consistency. But at least the data we've looked at, they not only make mistakes, they tend to be inconsistent in those mistakes. So they don't always call it the same way every time either. That's maybe a bigger problem from the player's perspective.
Al, thank you for calling. Have a great weekend.
Sure.
Go Cubs.
You did.
I said it.
You did say it. And you didn't flinch.
I didn't.
Toby, here's what I love. I love everything about this study. We all knew that these guys weren't getting 100% of the calls accurate, but we didn't know exactly what number. But you pointed out in no uncertain terms. The umpires, on the other hand, didn't seem that thrilled with the results of your study, did they?
Well, you wouldn't expect them to be.
No.
And by the way, you know, I just want to be, you know, they do a tremendous job.
Sure.
It just shows you the limitations of what humans can do on something that's very difficult to do.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's the issue. It's like I said on the show, if we didn't have an alternative, this would be the best. These guys are the best in the business.
Yeah.
And we got to live with it. But when there's such a viable alternative, why not use it? That's the question, I think.
So in this other scenario where they would use kind of a computer, the umpires would still be there, but they would have some sort of a messaging device where whoever's charting the game, watching the game, would signal them somehow that was a ball, that was a strike, and they would just announce it. They would still be there, just not making those calls, right?
That's right. I mean, think of it as a tool. You still need the home plate umpire. And by the way, the home plate umpire now is freed up a little bit to manage the game better, perhaps,
yeah,
and to
agreed.
Do some other things. So, you know, I think there could be a benefit. And this is a tool. It just helps them make more accurate calls. Most of the time they're going to make the calls themselves, but wouldn't it be great if in their ear they had a signal or some other sightline signal that said, hey, that really was a strike according to the measurements of the computer. It just gives them more information. You know, tennis has adopted this, and it's been tremendous.
Yeah.
All right, why don't they just have the home plate ump sitting there watching a television broadcast of it in, you know, live time, like a closed circuit, seriously,
right.
And just be on the loudspeaker and call
well,
it that way.
That's kind of what we're almost what we're talking about. Not with a TV, but with that signal, right?
That's right. In fact, on the show, they did it, right? Eric Burns,
yeah.
On the game himself, using the technology. It was seamless.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was great. And he was able to do all kinds of other things, like manage the game and do other things that you need an umpire to do.
You know, last night, again, so much at stake. It's game five of an NLCS series, and you saw so many calls because now they've got that computer graphic that we can watch at home that shows the exact strike zone, and then there are balls that miss it by quite a bit, and the umpires call them wrong, and you think, boy, my team could miss out on a chance to go to the World Series because that umpire missed a ball and strike call. It shouldn't be that way.
No, that's right. And you asked me earlier, you know, will Major League Baseball adopt this? Unfortunately, what typically happens is it's going to take some egregious error that you know changes the dynamics of or maybe even changes the entire outcome of the series before enough uproar is out there that people adopt this. So, you know, you don't want to ever see that, but that's typically what happens, right? They don't adopt these things until there's some you know really public error that causes a problem.
The umpires hate you though, don't they?
Hate's a strong word.
That I don't know. I mean, you know, like I said, my view is this is a tool that can make their jobs better.
Yeah, it is.
Trying to take a job away from them.
Right.
So, I get the pushback, but I think it helps them.
What are you working on now?
So, sports-wise or just in general?
In general.
I assume in general. So, you know, a lot of what I do, I'm a professor of economics and finance. I study stock markets and things of that nature. But a lot of what I do is look at decision-making, and sports is a great place to look at that. So I'm looking at more, sports-related type of decision-making, not so much related to umpires. I don't need to, go to that well. But decisions that coaches make and other things. And I try to tie these things back to business. So, you know, a lot of the way that sports organizations are run, you see some businesses run the same way, and there's some interesting aspects to that. Other than that, thinking about the economy, right, and what we can do to improve it.
Good.
that's always part of it.
Excellent.
Do you have a particular candidate running for president who you think is going to help the economy more than the other one, or do you not want to answer that?
I'm not going to touch that one.
That one's too close to call.
Yeah, that is.
The only thing I'll say is I think, presidents typically don't have that much influence on the economy. That's both good and bad news.
Absolutely.
So you did a bang-up job with this. And again, if people haven't seen it, it's on Real Sports on HBO with Bryant Gumbel talking about the accuracy and inaccuracy of the umpires in Major League Baseball. Great work and fun talking to you. Thanks so much, Toby. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right.
Thanks,
Toby. Take care. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's more show coming your way. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Steve, thank you so much. We are talking. It all started because I couldn't upload my picture of Dr. Ruth and myself to Twitter, and
right.
I wondered what was happening. You guys all heard me talking about it. And there was a hack into the East Coast was experiencing problems earlier this morning,
correct.
Like bright and early.
Yeah.
And you guys said, oh, yeah, well, there was a hack. But it turns out there's another wave of it, and it's a DDoS attack. And I found some information at dailymail.co.uk.
Right.
That explains what a DDoS attack is, because I know it affects a server. So I don't know if they're getting in to get the information of all these websites that are down. It's
mm-hmm.
just the websites aren't loading. You can't call them up, as you like to call
right.
it.
They've somehow blocked that ability. I don't know how they do it, but they have.
Well, DDoS attacks are a primitive form of hacking using botnets, networks of computers.
People who work with flowers?
Oh, botanists. I'm like, what? Botnets are a network of computers that hackers bring under their control. You're not even going to understand this.
I knew that. Everyone knows that.
Some people want to know this. They do this by getting users to inadvertently download software, typically by following a link in an email or agreeing to download a corrupted file. And then these botnets are used to bombard the servers with simple requests for information carried out simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So it basically just overwhelms them, and then these servers shut down, and that you can't get an internet site.
How did they fix it so quickly this morning? Because it didn't last long this morning.
I think 2 hours this morning is what they're saying.
Was it 2 hours? Yeah.
And then the second wave is
more serious?
Yeah, across the globe were hit. And now it's happening on the West Coast, near Texas, and in the Midwest and East Coast as well. So
right.
this is really,
white
that's
spread.
Where it began, yeah. And according to Homeland Security, it was not immediately clear who was responsible, said Jillian Christensen of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. And she says that the agency was investigating all potential causes. Dyn is the server that Steve Bertrand has been reporting on, and it had resolved one attack which disrupted operations for about 2 hours, but disclosed a second attack a few hours later that was causing further disruptions, and it's still going on.
That's very serious.
A lot of websites are affected, and some are spotty, so we'll keep you posted on that. Some cyber attacks going on.
Like I said earlier, we survived forever without the internet, but now that the internet has become just part of us, for a society to survive here in the United States without the internet is almost inconceivable. So should they bring down the internet, you've got major problems.
Can I tell you something? I was watching the Cubs game last night,
yeah.
And I started to realize that I have my phone in my hand the whole time. And I'm looking at Twitter, I'm looking at Facebook, emails,
during
I'm doing
the game.
All these things. And I'm watching Twitter, and I see people start tweeting about a great catch by Javi Baez.
Mm-hmm.
The TV was on. It was 12 feet from me. I wasn't even aware that it happened.
All right, that is sad.
I just think it speaks to the fact that
everybody's wired differently
now. I'm way too tied to it, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I know you've said this before, Bill, you're not on the Twitter.
I'm not on the Twitter.
Or as Arianna Huffington called it, the tweeter.
I'm not in either of those.
I love it. I love just, you know, Facebook is like what your friends or acquaintances have had for dinner and who's, you know, what their kid is up to. That's
right,
what
sure.
Facebook is.
Right.
Twitter, if you follow the right news services or entertainment things, Perez Hilton, like I follow, you get all the updates immediately. And in the newsroom, Steve uses it absolutely to help with breaking news.
You get a
news.
Lot of information that way.
Yep. On Wednesday night, I had a tennis match during the game and the debate.
I know. Someone tweeted it.
Right, it was right. It was all live tweeted. So I had to, even though I kept my phone with me in case of an emergency, I kept getting texts from people. I had 11 texts when the game was almost over. And what it was just people commenting, friends and family commenting on things that happened in the game. But I had DVR'd the game. I had taped
the
game. So I didn't want to know what was happening. And then I had this long list of people who just wanted to say something about the game.
You didn't look at it, did you?
No, until the game was in the ninth inning.
But it's the beauty of it. I mean, my mom and a couple of cousins and my brother, we're all in this group just kind of formed. And when the Cub game is on, it's a group text and we just comment all through the game. It's great.
Sure. It is like last night, Kylie's in New York, and she and I kept, you know,
texting.
How about that hit? How about that cat? You know, all through the game. And it made it feel as though we were watching the game together, even though we obviously weren't.
All right. Well, a second wave of hacks has gone on, and Homeland Security is looking into it. Dale, you have more information on this DDoS situation?
So it's not so much more information on this specific one, but rather for people to understand what's going on. Imagine that it's the Postal Service who's trying to deliver mail to you, just like the internet is trying to deliver web pages to you, except that at the same moment, all around the country, there are a whole bunch of people going up to those postmen and saying over and over again, I need you for a second, I need you for a second, I need you for a second, and they can no longer deliver the mail. And so that's an analogy to get you to understand that what they're doing is
overloading the server, basically.
They're overloading the process the server, the postman that's actually there to deliver your mail, and he's not letting you put your mail into your mailbox so that you can get it. So that's just like a high-level understanding of what's going on.
Can I ask you the most naive question that anyone's ever asked you?
You are so cute sometimes.
Just by the mere fact that you're trying to access any of those websites that are having the problems we described, you don't then become more susceptible somehow, do you? That'd be impossible, right?
It's not impossible,
it's not impossible, but you've gone beyond my deep level of expertise.
Oh, okay.
And I think if I said anything, I would be misleading you at best.
Oh, okay.
Well, basically, you cannot get on the server at the time because it's like calling, before call waiting. It's like five people are calling your dad at the same time,
yeah.
And you can't get through. It's like the server's
exactly
busy,
correct.
So you can't get on it.
I don't believe
it affects your stuff. However, the websites that we mentioned before, which I'll pull up some more. There was Reddit, there was Spotify, there was Credit Karma. You wonder if, you know, you have accounts with these places.
If you're compromised.
I don't know. See that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you'll hear about it. You'll hear about it right away. If that happens, you'll start hearing immediately. But that's just a little bit beyond my expertise.
Dale, how do you know all this?
Understand.
You seem very knowledgeable. How come?
I don't know. I've been in computers for the last 30, 35 years, and it's just, you know, stuff that eventually you pick up.
Right. Okay. Well, we appreciate it. Thanks so much. Have a good weekend.
You bet. Yeah, right. You too.
It is kind of scary. And
it's
really
very scary.
Donald Trump has really been taking to Twitter like a storm. And what is he doing now? This damn thing.
This
what's going on?
This just proves what he says. It's rigged. He can't get on Twitter. This whole thing's rigged.
See, I'm curious to know if when Twitter does come back up, if the only tweets we see are from Donald Trump, does right. that then mean he was responsible?
Yes.
I want to have the only word.
That's a red flag. All right, we'll take a very fast break, and then we'll come back, and we've got a little bit more show for you before Ron Adam join us. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. We are talking about the cyber...
The end of the internet. It's over.
See, I
Did
don't...
you enjoy the internet when we had it? It's done.
No, it isn't.
No more internet.
Yeah, I go to my Twitter account. Tweets aren't loading right now. Please tap to retry.
My pager stopped working also, by the way. I can't get my pager to work.
You might just need new batteries.
Could be.
Good point.
I might put a new battery in there.
All right, Lou, what is going on? We can't get on the tweeter.
Hi. What's going on is what you described. So the DDoS, it stands for distributed denial of service attack. And the way you described it with the botnet, all of that was correct. I was calling in actually to comment on a question you asked the previous caller about if somebody who goes to visit a website becomes like more susceptible because of, I guess, if they become more susceptible to attack because of the denial of service that's going on.
Yes.
So the answer to that question is really no. The attack, it's more of an annoyance to like people who are trying to browse the internet than it is an attack on them.
Yeah.
The computers that they're using to build that botnet that is causing the denial of service, those computers have been infected already with whatever malware, but they're not like active, generally speaking, they're not actively pushing out any other things that would harm you by trying to go browse those websites. It's just like they're literally, it's sort of like this kind of attack is comparable to like a junior high school prank.
All right.
It's like low risk to the people who are actually browsing the internet.
It just makes it inconvenient. You're none of your information, as far as we know, thus far, is being compromised. If you've got an account at any of those, like Wendy mentioned, PayPal earlier.
Yes.
I do a lot of business through PayPal. There's no reason for me to fear that they're messing with my balance, that my money's gone out of PayPal, is there?
Right.
Because you can't actually access the site. So I think it's just like you're in limbo if you're trying to get it. No one's actually in the accounts that you're aware of, right, Lou?
Correct. I mean, at least that's the understanding of how the distributed denial of service attack works. Now, like, most of the time with a denial of service, that's all that's happening. Like, it is theoretically possible that hackers could be doing more behind the scenes.
While the servers are down, now I'm really paranoid.
Well, no. So it's not, I shouldn't say it like that. But I guess what I mean is there's always a possibility that that could be happening. But, like, you wouldn't know about it just by hearing that there's a denial of service. They'd have to make a disclosure later. But I would say that more often, actually, you hear about the kind of attack where somebody's stealing passwords or doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is not associated with a denial of service, which is also kind of scary because you hear about those in the news. They'll just say, oh, yeah, we found out that such and such company,
the Illinois voters' information was hacked, something like that.
Yeah, and then they'll make that disclosure. But those are two different, typically speaking, they're totally isolated kinds of attacks, and they don't occur at the same time. The denial of services, it's really just an annoyance and an inconvenience.
I am very curious to find out who's behind it, because you say this is like almost comparable to like a junior high school thing. Like, why would somebody do this if they're not gaining access to information? They're just doing it to be a nuisance, as you're thinking.
Yeah, well, so I don't know the definitive answer. I think it's, but when I hear about attacks like this, so I work in IT, by the way, which is why
we kind of figured that.
Mm-hmm. And so I hear about attacks like this. And commonly what happens, actually, a lot of times you get teenagers who are learning how to hack. Or you'll get, you know, the intent behind the attacks can be more malicious, but usually it's literally the same kind of mentality as, like, a kid who throws a cherry bomb into a toilet or something and
Bill.
Is literally just vandalizing. This is sort of like the internet equivalent of vandalism.
Yeah. Just being a jerk for the sake of being a jerk.
Yeah.
But on a much larger scale.
Well, right. So, yeah, the impact of it is can be very wide-reaching, but it's oftentimes just somebody trying to flex their muscle to see what they can do. And then maybe it turns into, like, maybe the individuals who are actually doing this will go on to try to do bigger and badder kinds of attacks on things, but, we, you know, we I guess we can't say that for sure, for certain, just from what's happening today.
Sure.
That a lot of times this kind of attack, it's like literally just a nuisance, and it's just people trying to be nuisances for the sake of the nuisance.
All right, someone just texted in and said that they work in a medical office and can't access their medical files, so they can't help any patients today. Someone else has texted in. They got a message from Sprint saying, your telephone service provider may be experiencing a service delay. If possible, please remain available. So who knows what this might spread to by the end of the day?
Yeah, that sounds like it's very, very wide-reaching.
I like all of a sudden, remember airlines? Was it Southwest that went down?
Yeah.
United, I believe, had some issues. This could really be growing. So, of course, we'll keep you posted. Lou, thanks for filling in some of the blanks. We really appreciate it.
No problem. You're welcome.
Thanks, Lou. Again, Louis with an IT department, which shocked all of us. We did not see that coming, did we? Steve Bertrand Travel, by the way, still up. I just checked it. Still up and running.
Some of the websites that have been reported down, according to Gizmodo.com, Business Insider, CNN, Etsy, Grubhub, HBO Now, Okta, PayPal, Pinterest, PlayStation Network, and, of course, Xbox as well. Twitter, UrbanDictionary.com, Yelp is down, Credit Karma, Netflix, NHL.com, Fox News, and various others.
I have another incredibly naive question. Are those all just at random, or whoever hacked into this, did they pick the sites individually and say, I want to take that one down, I want to take that one down? What do you think? I have no idea of knowing the answer to that.
I don't know, because it seems so varied, and I don't know if a lot of these people are under the same corporate umbrella,
right.
But it's perhaps someone trying to take down as many popular websites as possible.
Yeah,
I don't know what I'm going to do without a recipe on Pinterest.
Every one of those, I only visit a couple of the ones you mentioned, but on every
PayPal.
One of those, I'm thinking of the backstory of how it's important that that business stay up and running. On
imagine
every one of
the money it's costing businesses
sure.
right now.
Yeah.
Xbox.com, my son can't order, you know, NHL 2017.
This might actually save you money.
Well, he got it last night.
Hacking.
It's
oh.
just probably not downloaded
oh.
yet because there's a problem with their server.
Yeah.
Pretty scary.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then Ro and Anna will be here. That's ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.